news jobs. They're old, grumpy, and are pretty opinionated. Here's your hosts, it's Mark and Jamie.
So hello and welcome to a festive Christmas New Year edition of the Carpcast, number 89. Did Santa fill your sack for you, Mark?
Yes, he emptied his sack and he filled mine. He didn't really fill it, just got a few bits and bobs, got some Jim Jefferies tickets, which I'm really looking forward to. I'm a big fan of Jim Jefferies.
Yeah.
He does use the C word a lot, he's not everyone's taste, but I think he's just goddamn hilarious, so I'll enjoy that. And you know how much, not really on the podcast, but in privately, I've whinged and moaned about some of the technology that anglers use.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, I've now got a drone and I can't wait to use it.
Are you going to take it on the lake?
Oh, yeah, I'd have done it already if it wasn't so windy.
Has it got like the GPS on it so you can bring it back and stuff?
It's not. No, I don't think it's a mega expensive unit. I've not really got it all set up yet, so I don't know its capabilities. But it's got a little camera that points down and is going to find me some fish. That's all I can say.
Some lakes are banning them, aren't they, I think? Yeah. I think the law's going to change on them at some point.
There's definitely licences and stuff coming in. There was a fella who comes in the shop regularly. I think he's an estate agent or something, and they use a drone to do like house pictures and everything. And you know, he was saying there's all sorts of rules and regulations and stuff coming in, because I know up near me there's a couple of prisons and they've had problems there with people flying drugs in with drones and stuff.
Yeah, I've seen that in the paper. I mean, there's all sorts of things you can use them for, peeping toms, you know, spying in people's bedrooms.
Oh, I didn't think of that.
Yeah,
spying in Derek Rich's bivvy to tune in.
I mean some of them, I think there's one or two that everyone always goes on about that I've looked into them, that they're quite expensive, like a grand or something like that, which seem to be like a middle of the road quality one, where you know you can hover it in one spot with the GPS and it will come back to you if anything goes wrong, or if it, you know, whatever. But those sort of ones hovering over lakes and, like you say, houses. I mean, back in the day when I was a lad, people used to charge fortunes. You ever been in a house where they've got like an aerial picture framed on the wall of their property? Used to be helicopters that went round doing that, and it was fortunes. And now you can, you know, 100 quid drone, you can have it up there and do it yourself. So. Yeah, very interesting.
Interested to see what what happens, because I know it's probably nearly a year back. It was definitely last winter in one of the Monk's Pit Facebook groups. Someone put some drone footage of flying over the lake, and at the time, I don't think the lake had done a fish for a few weeks. I think every fish on the lake was found by this drone, just sat in the middle of the lake, mid water, hardly moving.
Yeah, I've seen the lads down at Nash have got a pretty good one. Company one or what, but obviously they use it for filming for the Nash TV and stuff. And they've seen it when they go up above the new lake that Kev's dug, which is pretty clear. It's got a lot of Canadian in it, and the water's gin clear. You can just see every carp in it, like everyone of the fish that has been put in there. You can just see them pretty much every time the drone goes up.
Did you see that? I think it was on one of the Fox ones. I'm not sure if it was the Lee Morris bit. Mm. It was on one of the Frimley pits. It was like, you know, flying over, and there's like three or four great big fish under this drone, and one of them just like, you know, turns on its side and just like flips and nuts out under the drone. It's some belting footage.
Oh, I've not seen that.
It's good.
Yes. So, I've not had any fishy Christmas presents, nothing. In fact, when you get to my age, you don't really get any presents. Got a pair of shoes off the missus. That's pretty much it. I think a dressing gown. Missus didn't like my 20-year-old dressing gown, says it's rotten.
Well, you're supposed to wash it.
She's supposed to wash it. Let's get it right.
Yeah, I'll take it she's not there.
No, she's out at a family party. I've used the podcast to bail from her family. The Lofthouses are all alcoholics, and I don't need much of an excuse to get out there. They have a family party every year, just after Christmas, and then her grandmother bullies me, so she's the worst of them. She just gets pissed and abuses someone. She finds somebody wherever she is every night. She finds somebody and abuses and picks on them. They're the victim, and it's quite often me if I'm there. So yeah, it's easier to get out of the way.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I think I've got away with that one because my wife doesn't drink at all, and her mum is an alcoholic. Wow. I don't know if she's an alcoholic, but she's borderline. And yeah, she's the most. But the thing is, the good thing is, I don't have to do anything about bailing because usually after about 10 minutes, my wife has an argument with her and we storm out anyway.
Fantastic. I took the dog with me and I had a podcast to do. So I went and ate the food, stayed a couple of hours. Once the Jägermeister came out, everyone started doing shots. I was out the door.
Oh, gotta go now.
A few sake digs from a nan on the way out, but you know, I call it a lucky escape.
Yeah, I'll tell you what I have noticed. I went out Christmas Eve with a mate of mine who's over from Manchester, had a couple of pints in the local, which, you know, it's not quite a country pub, but not far off. It's got, you know, nice open fire in there, and it was crackling away. And about 100 yards from it is the local River Tourne, and at the minute, it's only about 18 inch deep, and you can tell there's not a lot of water in it because the beer in the pub tastes so much better.
So what have we got coming up? Well, there isn't a great deal of news this week. As far as I'm aware, Holmesy's not had any more rounds with anybody else, so all is quiet.
Or any 60-pounders.
Yeah, no, if he catches another one, then everybody will call his integrity into question, no doubt, I guess. But
not everybody.
Not everybody, no. A small group of people. But, it's not been a huge amount of news. So what I have seen today, though, is lots and lots of fish being caught. For some reason today, I mean, I don't know what it's like where you are, Mark, but in Blackpool it's back down to zero again after we've had a really mild, we've had double figures, haven't we, for just over a week now.
Yeah, it was nice.
And it's gone cold. And I even just saw a post in my newsfeed pop up now from a guy, I think it was called Nick, somebody who lives on the Ebro. He must have a business out there. And I'll see if I can find his post now. Well, I'm sure he said something along the lines of, if it is this guy, I think it may be. Yeah, he basically said, if you're in the UK, I hope you're out fishing because there's a hell of a lot of fish being posted on my timeline. And I thought the same thing this morning. No, I can't find that post. Might not have been this. Oh, it is this guy. Oh yeah, 6 hours ago. If you're not fishing in England right now, get out there. There's lots of fish coming out on my feed. Looks like they're loving snow and wind. Yeah, it's been extremely windy, and as I've always said in the winter, it's like the first cold day after a mild spell seems to be when does the bites. I haven't fished right through a winter for quite a few years, but I've done, I know, in the last 10, 15 years, I've probably done like 4 winters where I've fished religiously right through the winter, you know, all conditions. And then I remember one year fishing Yateley. It was a funny old winter. I fished right away through because, as I've said before, it was so busy. It was before it went 48 hours and obviously while all the 9 mirrors, the originals, were still alive. And It was so busy, I couldn't get a swim or a choice of swim until everybody else stopped fishing, basically. And there was 3 or 4 of us that fished right through the winter. And we kind of all took a quarter of the lake each and all stuck to our quarter right the way through. And now we had quite a lot of cold weather, but every few weeks we'd get like 7 days of mild weather, double figures again, bit of wind and rain. And we're all like, great, it's warming up. And it wouldn't do a bite. And then the first frost after the mild spell, that's when a fish came out. Bear in mind, there was only 9 carp and a handful of commons in the lake. So it's not like there was many fish. But it did a bite literally every time. And it probably did 4 or 5 fish through the winter, one a month or something maybe. I was lucky enough to have one of them in December. I had single scale. But that was the pattern. We'd get a mild spell, and then as soon as there was a frost, bang, there was a bite. And I did think about that today when I saw all these fish coming out, because it went cold last night for the first time, and there's after a really mild week. I mean, I fished Nashies last week with Roger, and the water temperature went up a degree every day. It was 2 degrees when I got there. It was 4 degrees when I left. And we were like, if this stays like this for another week, Roger seems to think 6 degrees is the key in the middle of winter. I always think 10 degrees is the key when you're coming out of winter, but right in the middle of it.
Does Roger still carry that? It's like a restaurant tool they had on back on Elster, where you just kind of like, you know, point it at something and fire this laser beam or something, it tells you the temperature of it. Does he still have that?
No, he's got a proper, he still takes temperature every day. He's got one of them ones that sinks. So that one you're on about, it was for measuring temperature of food to serve it, but it only does...
Yeah, measuring your steak and that when you send it out.
Yeah, it only does the outside, so obviously it only does the top of the surface of the water. This one he's got now, he ties it on a long length of braid and ties one end to his buzz bars, and then he just throws it in the water and leaves it there, and then every time he wants to know the temperature, he just pulls it out and sees what it is. I think you could put it out on a float and get it to test different depths if you wanted. You could set it to, you know, halfway down or three quarters of the way down, whatever, but it obviously just does the bottom where he's thrown it in, you know, like 10 yards out or something, and just leaves it out, and then checks it morning, checks it in the afternoon. And yeah, he's been religiously taking temperatures for a couple of winters now. I did it 1 year. I think it was that year, actually, that I fished Yateley all the way through the winter. I'm pretty sure it was that year I was religiously taking temperatures.
Would you like to drone back then?
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
I could just imagine it.
In this show's going to be a little bit different. We've spoke to a number of guests. It's a celebrity edition. Spoke to a few guests today, one of them being Mr. Frank Warwick, where we do speak about temperatures and all that sort of stuff. So let's get Frank on.
The Carpcast is sponsored by Clearwater Fisheries, the North's premier fishery complex. For more details, visit clearwaterfisheries.co.uk.
So I'd like to welcome another one of our favourite guests, or most favourite guests. He's a single hookbait expert, a long-range caster, an all-round funny guy. How are we doing, Frank Warwick?
I'm all right, thanks, Jamie. Yeah, Happy New Year to the listeners and every Merry Christmas. I know it's going to be a bit late by the time they hear this. It'll be New Year. So Happy New Year to everyone.
Have you had a good Christmas?
Yeah, at my age, Jamie, I stop even counting, you know what I mean? It's all like, it's just an unnecessary load of that palaver where you're spending a lot of money that you didn't want to spend, and spending time digging out, you know, all sorts of Christmas tree lights and crap like that, and instead of going fishing, you know. So
you feel exactly the same as me. A load of unnecessary stress, hassle and money. But
it is, mate. And I hate to sound like Ebenezer Scrooge, but you know, it's nice for the kids, but they're getting older now, so they can make their own entertainment, you know.
Yeah, mine's the same. My daughter's 17, 18 in July. She's not interested anymore. It's hard to get her to commit to anything. It's, you know, it's like, what are you doing New Year's Eve? Don't know. What are you doing this day? Don't know. Wait, what are you doing tomorrow? Don't know. Right, that's it.
my two lads were at that warehouse project last night, and they didn't get until half past six this morning. So I
Oh yeah, what was on last night? I'm going on Friday and Saturday, actually, so yeah, I'll be out the game next week. Yeah, I've got a double header. It's on Friday is my partner in the fishing show, Spenny, and it's his own night, Kaluki, on Friday, and then Saturday's the Hacienda one for us old fogies who remember it back in the day. So yeah, it's going to be a crazy one. But, yeah, more about you. Got any fishing planned?
I'm going to try and get on Orchid I shouldn't be saying that because every bugger will be descending on it if they're not already, because you know, it's a great winter water.
What is it about that place in the winter? It seems to come, I don't see many reports on it all year round until it gets cold and then it's 30s galore. Like, what is it?
Well, I know what it is exactly. I fished it a few times recently in the last sort of couple of months, and there's quite a lot of weed on the place, and when you bring the weed back in, it crawls off. It's alive with food. So I think it takes quite a while, because it's shallow. I think all the shrimp and everything seems to last quite a while in the weed, and it's getting the sunlight still, and the weed seems to keep going. And I think the naturals last a lot longer than most places, because it's, as I say, it's shallow, most of it. And I think after Christmas, a lot of it dies down a bit. A lot of the stuff that's alive in the weed dies down. And I think then they have to start looking for angler's bait a bit more.
Yeah.
It's shallow, so they can't be multi-layered sort of zig victims.
Yeah.
You know, so they're never far from your food or your hook baits. They tend to congregate and group up, and there's a good head of fish in it. So when you're on them and they start suddenly having a trough and start competing, I think it's anything can happen, you know.
Do they move around in the winter now? Is it usually the same sort of areas?
They do move around, but they generally congregate where you've seen some of these probably DVDs, you know, where some of the Fox Boys have had some big hits on there, and you know, Mark Bartlett and Kev Hewitt, Scott Maslin's a good mate of mine. He's had a big hit on there as well, you know. So it's worth keeping. Going rather than sitting there waiting to hear someone else has done it. It's best to just get your ass on there and do it yourself.
Fantastic. And do you think the depths are maybe the key to it? I mean, what's the average depth on the lake?
It's only about 5 foot deep,
is it?
Or you know, less, yeah, 4.5, 5 foot. Just recently, it's been very low because we haven't had much rain, and it was places where you're normally getting 4 and 5 feet with 3 feet.
Really?
Yeah.
It's been quite a dry summer down south, isn't it? It's not so much in the northwest where we are, but I've noticed a few lakes like a good couple of feet down all year.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think it's generally a recurring theme, that, Jamie. You know, this the river near our house has been lower than I've ever seen it. In the summer. Yeah, and you know, I think the weather's all weird, isn't it? You know, even though we say we get a lot of rain from Manchester, it's not as bad as I've seen it in the past at times, you know.
Yeah, this time last year we had floods, didn't we?
Exactly. Yeah. So you just don't know what you're getting, you know.
What sort of tactics are you going to be using then on Orchid? Like, how do you approach it? Do you stick singles out first or higher tracks? Or what's your sort of game plan?
Well, it's a bit weird. I hate to say it, but when I went on last time, well, the time before last, I'm not really a big bait boat user. I pride myself on casting and accuracy and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
But I was there with Scott Maslin and a young fella that's who's in the England scene, in the young England scene, Adam Biddulph. He's only 14, but he's a kid that I got. I've been sort of nurturing him along, helping him with the fishing a little bit.
Yeah.
Not that he needs much help. He's a brilliant little angler. But I got him on one of the England things in the Czech Republic, so he was with us. We all did it traditional casting, you know. Using the sticks and everything, and spawning dead sight, accurate, and didn't get anything. And there's a guy sidled up, got in a swim, which Scott moved from because he said he couldn't get a drop, he couldn't get a clear spot on it, fishing conventional. This guy turns up with a bait boat, slips one cup of corn in it, I think it was, a small little 12 mil yellow well, I think it was a pop-up, slips it out in the bolt, and he'd not even been in half an hour, and he had a 35 and a 26.
Wow.
And when the water's shallow like that, you can't really compete with a radio-controlled boat.
No.
And the only two people that caught were using radio-controlled boats. Everyone else casting was struggling. But, of course, we know that they can catch casting in the winter. But I think the fish are then more difficult to spook if they're in an area and they want to be there.
Mm.
I think you can get away with, you know, a few spots on top of them when they're tight. But when the fish were spread out and you start disturbing a small group, I think they say bugger off, you know. So yeah. there was a bait boat's a definite advantage on that place where you can use them, you know. I can't see a way around it, because how can you compete with a bloke that's sending out one cup full of corn with a little rig on top of it and finding a hole and an echo sound in the weed bed?
Yeah,
you know,
I've seen
it. It's impossible.
I've seen it before on other lakes, like years ago. There was a craze of, like, on Yateley of using really tiny hook baits, and they were literally, I mean, everybody on there in the car park used a bait boat, and they were literally counting grains of hemp into the boat. You know, it was less, like say, less than a handful, but you just can't fish like that normally. Like you know, literally a handful of hemp, half a tin of corn and a shaved down tiger nut or something, and two or three loose tiger nuts in the boat. I know that it's right on top of your hook bait, you know, just a tiny little
in a clear spot. Yeah,
you just can't do that. I mean, maybe a bag, you know, a solid bag's close, but I don't like using PVA in winter when it's really cold.
Yeah,
it's,
I know what you mean. So is this conundrum? Do you join them, or do you sit there and stand on ceremony and blank your tits off? You know, so you've got to probably choose a venue where they're not allowed if you want to have the same playing field as everybody else. But I mean, I sat there with stubborn pride and thought, no, even though I had one in the van, because I'd used it in Croatia, first time I've used one for donkey's years, and that only lasted a day because I just felt like it wasn't me, you know, as much as I know how good they are. So it went back in the van, and I caught most of mine in Croatia casting. So I had one with me, and I was a stubborn swine, and I just thought, no, I'm not doing it. And then, you know, it does make you think, though. And then the next time down, I actually succumbed to it. I thought, you know what? If you can't beat them, join them. So I got the thing out, and me and my lads used it, but that never made any difference. No one on the lake caught anything.
I'm not going to sit on a lake that you can use bait boats. Everybody else is using bait boats, and that's the only way people are catching. I'm not going to blank just out of pride. You know, I'm going to do when in Rome, mate. I'd rather not use the technology, you know, but it's not a level playing field, is it? You know, yeah, it's a bit of a
reward. It isn't, mate, because in car talk or wherever it's reported, you know, you never hear that little gem that the old boat came out, and then they never quick to say, oh yeah, I was the only person on the whole lake using a boat.
I've read so many reports in carp talk, you know, about fish that I've known have been caught with a boat, you know, big fish.
Yeah.
And it mentions everything, the spot, the bait, you know, the distance, everything except, and I dropped it out with my bait boat. You know, it's like, if you're gonna use them, embrace it, you know. Just don't miss that only detail out in the catch report, you know. I mean,
exactly,
the parrot, you know, the record, English record,
the waiting, Chris,
literally every capture of that fish was with a bait boat, and the only person ever to say that was Terry Earn, who's embraced bait boats for 15 years that I've known him. You know, he uses a bait boat.
Yeah, exactly.
he calls it the cheating boat. That's what he calls it. But he's like, he's got nothing to prove to anybody. He used to use three rods to get a bait into place in tight areas. He's done it all.
Yeah.
He knows he can do it. But why would you put yourself through, you know, when you can use a boat?
Exactly, mate. Exactly. So, you know, therefore, was, you know, my next dilemma will be if I do go to Orchid, do I or don't I? Well, let me just tell you this, I'm going to bloody take it just in case, and if everybody else is using them, you know, I'm not going to be a stubborn old sod and sit there and go on with egg on your face and think, oh, why didn't I? You know, Nice. I'm afraid I'm, my two lads, they're young, you know, one's 17 and one's 21. They think I'm a right old fart. They say, oh, Dad, why don't you embrace all the technology? Why haven't you got one of them beepers? And why haven't you got this? And why haven't you got that? I says, well, you know, I've always done without it, and I've done okay. And they says, yeah, but, you know, it's like saying, why are you using bite alarms? You know, there has to be. I says, yeah, okay, I get that, but at the end of the day, it's my choice. Yeah, I have this barometer, you know, that sort of tells me where I'm pushing it and thinking, do you know what, it's not really sporting anymore where you, you know.
Yeah, the deepers are an interesting one because for me, I mean, I haven't got one yet, but I do intend on getting one. But for me,
me too, I'll be honest with you, Jamie, I really want one now.
They're good, yeah. I mean, they're not a fish finder. Apparently, they're not great at finding fish anyway, but where I see it is as a replacement for a marker float. It's just a high-tech marker float because at the end of the day, we can cast a marker float out and check the depth. But here, we can do it with a deeper without disturbing the bottom, without it getting locked up in weed. You cast it out in your swim as far as you can, reel it back and note the contour, and straight away you get a picture. Now, you can do that with you're still doing it with rod and line. It's just a higher tech version of saves you counting the float up. I don't see it being any difference. I'd be happier if there was no fish feature function on it at all. You know, it's just.
Well, I'm a little bit different from that. I'll be honest with you. Of course, I like the feature finding. I get that, obviously. But I was over in Italy at Parco della Brenta with a group of guys, and Ian Sorrell was over there, a friend of mine from he's English. He used to fish with Mike Wilson on Savvy and did the old baiting pyramid and that.
So he's not living in America?
In America now.
Yeah.
Hey?
He lives in America, doesn't he?
That's it. Yeah, he's a smashing bloke. He's a lovely fella, and he embraces technology, you know. And he was sharing a swim with a mutual friend of ours, Chris Thompson, and Chris Thompson was out fishing Ian by quite a way. They were sharing the swim and sharing the work, doing the spomming together and everything. But Ian's side wasn't as productive as Chris's. I mean, Chris had 750s on the bounce. Can you imagine that? All commons as well, big commons.
No way.
And yeah, and Ian got the deeper out with Chris's permission. He put it on his side of the swim, and there was quite a few fish, and then he put it on Chris's side, and it was black. And we tried it again when it quietened off and the fish had drifted off and backed off. And then he started fishing further out because the deeper showed him where the fish were, and then bam, straight back into action again.
No way.
So it was definitely showing where the fish were. 1,000,000%. Million percent.
Somebody told me they weren't that great on the actual fish finding bit, but that sounds like that's wrong.
Mm. Well, this was the pro one. So, yeah, that definitely showed fish. And I mean, you know how difficult it is with location at times in the winter. We all do. We all struggle with it, even on waters that are quite decently stocked with fish. And, you know, if you've got limited time, you're busy with work and all the rest of it, and, you know, you haven't always got the time that some of these younger guys that have opted out a little bit, you know, they might think, right, I'll not be breaking my neck to get a job. I'll have a couple of years off and go fishing. And we've all kind of done it. I did it. I know that. And then you had plenty of time, you know, looking for the fish and fishing around the lake till you found them and this, that, and the other. Well, now you've got the opportunity with one of them things to at least have another string to your bow to locate them. So, you walk the dog down the lake, get the deeper out, have a good old look around, see if you can find a few fish, put a bit of food in. So it's a nice little edge, really. So,
can you imagine?
You know, I'm not going to...
Especially this time of year when the fish are grouped up. You imagine walking around, say, Christchurch or somewhere, you know, it's quiet,
exactly.
Winter, no one's on, and flick that out in a few swims. It's not going to take you long to find where the fish are. Especially in winter when, like, half the battle is just being on them because you're not seeing much, there's not much indication, you're not getting the liners. Like, to just know that there's fish in your swim is enough to carry
on
fishing, isn't it, sometimes?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's... It spurs you on when you've got something that's sort of helping the situation to that degree. It takes a lot of that. Am I nowhere near fish? You know, when you sort of sat there in miserable weather, freezing cold, your fingers hurting, and, you know, them long nights, you're thinking, oh, Christ, you know, am I even at the right end of the lake or anywhere near fishing it? Anything like that has got to be a plus. So, you know, I'll be getting one, I know that much.
And depths, like physique fishing and whatever, if you can all see that they're sat at a certain depth, it's just, like, even... You know, even just for knowing how deep the lake is, to set a zig in the first place, if you know it's 10 foot,
exactly,
and you want to set one at, you know, 3/4 of the way or something, it just saves the hassle. Cast it out once, there's no disturbance. And then even better, perfect, if you can see the fish are sat at 5 foot or something, then that's where your zigs are going, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it's tailor-made for it, mate, isn't it?
I'm sold. And, where do we sign up?
Yeah, well, we've done a bit of an advert menu there, haven't we? Like, so whoever, the powers that be that distribute those things think, bloody hell, that was not bad. Let's sort them ones out.
it's Corda now, isn't it, I think, that do them?
Oh, is it? Oh, right. Yeah. Well, maybe not then, Jamie. What do you think? Maybe not.
Well, I was supposed to be speaking to Danny today, actually. He's not answered the phone yet. But I did try him earlier, and I think he buttoned me. But he did say to call him on the 27th. So I might, if he answers, I might tap him up. And second, I'll try Ali. But yeah, I mean, they look that useful, assuming you don't lose it. I've heard that the pike like chasing them, so it's an idea to use some sort of like tough leader with them so that they don't get bitten off, because nothing worse than spending £200 and I'd be going in for it. It's that simple.
but a bit interested if a pike's just come up and bit the thing off completely and vanished with it.
yeah exactly. Well,
you better track it down again though, wouldn't you? You just go around with you or maybe not. I don't know how it works on the phone. Maybe you couldn't locate the actual gadget.
Well, luckily they float, so as long as the pike doesn't pierce it should be all right. But yeah, I can imagine the odd one's been lost. You know, you get wrapped up in your rings when you're casting or something and crack it off.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No. Hey, listen, pal. You know, let me just tell you something while it's on my mind. You were saying that you wouldn't mind a couple of tips for the listeners before, weren't you?
Yes. Yeah. Especially cold water tips for this time of year, certainly.
Yeah. Well, the one that's interesting that I've just had quite a lot of success on recently is you probably remember the glow in the dark enterprise.
Yes, certainly.
Plastic column, which was my idea originally. It was about, I don't know, probably more than easily 12 years ago I come up with it. Yeah. And initially it worked really well, and it still does if you get the right waters for it. It seems to be a little bit either yes or no. It either works or it doesn't work. You know, there's no in betweens where it sort of works. It's like yes or no. And anyway, I was speaking to Chris, who's one of the owners of Enterprise, quite a few years ago, and I wanted yellow rather than the blue and the green. So I got some yellow, and he did me some corn, and he did me some maize and bits and pieces. Most of it was floating. Anyway, I recently was thinking about revisiting this, because I thought, why did they ever stop using it regular? So I decided, I was on in Shropshire, when we had them big hurricanes and everything, and I suddenly thought, you know what, I'm gonna go there. So I had two trips, and I had three fish from two trips, which was good. I had two 30 pound commons. Biggest was the biggest common in the lake on my first trip, which was nice. I didn't know it was the biggest common in the lake, by the way. It just happened, you know. Anyway, I caught them on the I was tipping the baits with a glow-in-the-dark yellow maize, and it's quite a big maize, and it's buoyant. And I didn't get a bite on the rods. I could use three rods. I didn't get a bite on the first time. I put it on one rod, and that one went. And then the next time I thought, you know what, I'm going to try it on every rod. And I had two fish on that occasion. And I thought, maybe that's a coincidence, because when you're using something like that, if you put it on every rod, you might have caught anyhow.
Yeah.
So you're not learning anything. But if you do it on maybe a rod or two, and, you know, the normal boilie works, with or without the glow-in-the-dark stuff, you'd think, well, you know, they're just finding the food.
Yeah.
When you start picking them up, tipping the bait without you thinking, do you know what, they're finding this easier, because the water was reasonably deep where I was fishing. Anyway, I got both the takes in the dark, and on the last trip, and the time before, that was in the dark also. So every bite in the dark. Anyway, here's the interesting bit. I'm with Sonic, and they wanted me to go to Barston Hall.
Yeah.
That, of course, because they were doing a trade show to show the new product for 2018. You know, you do the mass trade shows and the road shows. To go down and cast a few of the new rods and just to some of the shopkeepers. So, like, they haven't got a guest house, and I could stay there and I have a few beers and someone sleep with them, you know, because it's a two-day affair.
Yeah.
Bizarrely enough, we got down and it's only a few weeks ago, and you know, LA is not really very prolific. It's a match type, or, you know, it's not difficult getting bites. So I wasn't able to fish in the day because I was doing the casting and meeting people and, you know, showing people the tackle. Anyway, they got this house that they rented, and this widow that owned the house, seeing them all in the Sonic shirts, he says, well, you lot are all working for a company. He says, well, yeah, what about it? Oh, no, we don't have that. It's holiday makers only. We don't have any business people or workmen staying in our property. So they threw Ian McCormack and all the Sonic guys out.
No way.
So we had nowhere to stay, so they had to stay, you know, sort somewhere else out. And it was at such short notice, it was difficult. So I said, tell you what, save any buggering around, I'll go on the lake and I'll fish. So I didn't have any brewing gear, I didn't have any, you know, food or anything like that. I thought, sorry, I'll just go on, it's only a night. So I went down, just picked a convenient spot, got the rods out, and I thought, right, I'll use the glow-in-the-dark corn again, on top of a boilie, just tipping it, like, you know. Put small bags on, three rods are used. Put two rods out, and I never got the third one out. One screamed off, and I thought, yeah, I was expecting that, you know. And I had a burst of, I think it was seven runs and landed six, so a double run as well. I thought, oh, I'm going to be awake all night with these bloody things. You know, when you sort of too much of a good thing, it's not what you want. I thought just a run every hour would be all right, and then I might have to wind them in the dark. Anyway, these two young lads come round in this sort of pimped-up sort of golf GTI thing with all the fishing gear in. And they went, it is you, isn't it, pal? And I went, I think it is. And they said, how many have you had now? I says, I don't know, I think about six fish. He went, Jesus Christ, pal, there's only been one fish out in the last 3 days.
No way.
It switched off completely, and he says, everybody's been moving. He says, we've been here since Monday, and blah, blah, blah. And he says, it's really switched off. Even the match boys are not getting bites. Anyway, they were nice lads. I got chatting to him, and I only had a couple of packets of corn. Well, it's corn, it was maize, this corn and that. I told him about it being that. I thought it was perhaps that. I give him some, and one of them sent me a message about a week later on Instagram, and he went, mate, look at this. And it was from a different water, and he was sending me pictures of some nice fish. You know, he'd had a mid-20 there and what have you. And I thought, wow,
Are we
definitely
gonna,
working something, isn't it?
Are we going to be able to buy this, the yellow glow-in-the-dark?
Yeah. If you go on the website, they've got it on the website. It's under glow-in-the-dark maize. It's got a code on there. You do a search in a drop-down box. It's not corn, it's maize.
Right.
So remember that. If you want to try some, it's definitely worth it. I'm not saying it's going to, you know, I'm not saying it's going to be the thing that cracks everywhere, but it's definitely captive for me. And it's not a blatant advert for Enterprise, because I'd be telling you that I wouldn't be bothered with saying it's yellow. I'd be saying use the blue and green, but the yellow is definitely the one that's definitely been catching me a lot of fish.
Well, how often are you charging them up? How long does it last?
Well, what I do, there's two ways of doing it. You can leave it in just ambient light. It doesn't have to be sunlight. And if you leave it out for 8 hours, you get a couple of hours off it. It definitely loses that intensity after a while when it's in the cold water. But the other way of doing it, I found out by accident, it's a supercharger. It looks like a light bulb when you do it. It's put it in boiling water. You know when you, if you've got a shrink tube on your rig or you want to sterilise your bait,
yeah,
you drop it in boiling water and it comes on like a light bulb.
Uh-huh.
The heat must set off the chemicals and it goes crazy.
No way.
Yeah, and hey, guess what? It works in the day as well, by the way. You know, if you're on somewhere where there's not much light and it's murky, and you know, especially in winter, and you can imagine it being, you know, 10 feet down, it's pretty dark down there.
Yeah.
It definitely works then as well, so it's worth using it in the day as well.
I'm going straight on the website right now. I'm going to get myself some. Honestly,
Jamie, that'd be the best tip I could give for the moment, you know. But the other one that's interesting, I don't know, you can only really do it with a chod rig, this, and I've done it many a time, is casting a chod rig out in the winter, find the middle of the lake. If you're struggling to find the fish, locate them. And if you get it in the margins and test it, if you get a chod and you pull it along the bottom, it leans back, as long as it's not choked with weed, it leans back and then sits back up and corrects itself.
Yeah.
So what that enables you to do is to cast out, fish it at range, and then every 20 minutes, give it a 3 or 4 turns of the handle, or sweep it back half a rod length, and then you can cover a load of water to search for the fish.
That's a good idea. So the old pulling back, like we used to do in the 80s, I mean, you'd always pull back a little bit, wouldn't you, sort of back in the day?
Yeah.
Well,
especially, I remember when I used to fish for bream, and if you weren't getting bream bites, I know it sounds a bit terrible fishing for bream, but I used to do it hoping to catch carp.
Yeah.
On the top flash of the windspot, I used to feed all the bream and the roach, and because using conventional carp gear, you couldn't really catch them in the early days, and, you know, in the 70s this was. But if you used a load of maggots in ground bait and corn, you get them bully the other fish out, and when you get a bonus carp down of them. So that's what I was hoping for. And you used to shit yourself, you know, you'd get the old equivalent tip of that round, and then you got yourself a 15-pound carp on, you know, when you were fishing for the smaller stuff, hoping to get the carp. Anyway, what I was saying is, everything you started, including carp, you'd only just give it 3 or 4 turns and swept the rod round, and then it suddenly collapsed round and tear off. So that movement on the bait isn't a bad thing. It sometimes catches their attention.
Gary Bayes was talking to me earlier in the year, saying exactly the same thing. Like, he pulls back, just winds it in a few inches, and it's like, everyone thinks you're crazy. I mean, like I say, it's tough on weedy waters, isn't it? Cause you just don't know what you pulled into. You're fishing little spots, but yeah, with the chod rig, I guess.
You can, and I've got away with it, and I've had bites sort of ridiculously quick after moving it. It's just food for thought, really. That if you've got a vast area of water and it's not too weedy, and you want to cover a lot of area without making a disturbance of casting a lot, that is a way of doing it, really.
Yeah, well, we used to do it with the float, float fishing for small fish. You just tweak the float sometimes when it hasn't moved for a bit. You just tweak it, and it, like, triggers that kind of competition, or, you know, you're pulling the food away from them, or I don't know what it is, but it certainly works.
Yeah, or else it just catches the eye. It's hard to guess what it is. Because I could imagine with it being murky in some places, you know, just that it suddenly gets that movement. It's almost like, oh.
Yeah.
It's like if you're in a room where nothing moves, and now all of a sudden something moves in that room, it catches your attention, doesn't it? It's like, you know, it's just one of those awareness things.
Definitely. Yeah, that is a superb tip that I guarantee not many people do. Not many people do now, yeah, just switching it, tweaking it. I mean, I've had it when birds have been picking me hook bait up, and within a second of a bird picking it up, a carp's had it straight away. Happened to me on Clifton twice. I had six fish off one spot in a session. I was getting leathered by the birds, and I was just spomming again to, like, almost scare them, just putting some bait in the spod, whacking it out to scare them, and it was constant. And I remember getting picked up by a bird. I watched it go down. There was a group of them on the spot. The bird hit the surface. I got the usual drop back like you get. And then the bobbin tightened up again instantly. I was like, fucking hell, it must have hooked itself, you know, rather than picking up and dropping it. Yeah. And then it ripped. I picked the rod up. I'm still expecting it to be a bird. And the birds went off one way and this thing never came to the surface. It was a carp. And it happened twice in that session. So I think the birds were doing it for me. They were moving it. And it was triggering the carp somehow.
Yeah, I've got very little doubt that's what happened to us. I went with a mate of mine, Dale. He took me as a guest on that Willows.
Yeah.
Up in Yorkshire, and we went last December, about the 20th of December it was, if I remember right. And it was obviously there was a lot of guys down there that fish it a lot that were in the. They were kind of rotating the deeper part of the lake between them.
Mm.
The mate was saying, so we can get there, you know. Naturally, it's quite a shallow lake. You thought, could do with a bit of depth on it. Anyway, I suddenly thought about it, and I thought, do you know what? Let's do the opposite. So we fished near the car park, where everybody avoids, and it was 18 inches, 2 foot deep, with 55, 60 swans on the area. it's not exactly... very enticing that, but we had a couple of nights and we had 12 bites, landed 10, 5 each.
Wow.
I got the all them stockies, them I'm not sure who they got them off, Viv Shears fish, I think, something like that.
I've seen them, yeah.
Yeah, a nice looking fish, but I had one that was 33, 10.
Yeah.
That was the only 30 we had of deep, better fish amongst them. It's just the way the cookie crumbles. But do you know what? Multiple pickups, I mean mental pickups, there mustn't have been a stick of bait left out there, just the hook baits, and we were getting them all amongst the swans that were tearing your hair off thinking there'll be no carp there, and the carp was right underneath them around their feet competing with them.
Crazy. I think it is competition. Somebody stealing the food, they're like, right, I'm having it, you're not eating all the bait. Maybe it triggers them, I don't know. But yeah, I mean, some lakes,
well, animals are very, they're very much like that, aren't they? If there's a lot of bait around, they're not too fussed. They're sort of very take it or leave it. It's like with our cat and the dog. If the dog, he doesn't want to eat dog food very much. Mm. He likes everything we want. And then you put his dog food out, he's dead reluctant to get it.
Yeah.
And then once we starve him out and he decides he's got to have it, he'll eat the cat's food as well. Yeah. He'll just turn around and eat the lot, and then the cat sort of like competing with him, you know, sort of trying to get him off it. But they're both indifferent to it, unless each other wants to eat, you know, all of the food. And then they suddenly, wolfing it down. It's amazing. So I think there's an element of that with fish and nature, with the birds, and that can be, like you say, you know.
It's like young kids. You put two young kids in a room together, they both want each other's toy. Then even if they weren't bought, or their own toy that they weren't playing with, if someone else's kid picks it up, they start going mad because you've took their thing away, even though they weren't playing with it, you know. And it's, I don't know, it's a competition thing, it must be.
It is, I'm sure of it. I'm sure that's, you know, if you can get that situation going like that, it's not bad. Well, I mean, the birds are always a good starting point, I think, because wherever they're feeding, I don't think that the carp are far away.
No, on a lot of lakes, that's definitely the case. You know, I've seen it. Some lakes, it's the opposite. I remember the birds on St. Ives wouldn't go near where the fish were, but the fish were quite sporadic. You know, there was only 20 carp in 35 acres, so I think it was a bit more of a shock to them, especially the big one. The ducks would like cower away from the fish. I've seen a few examples of that. Yeah. And you got lakes like Horseshoe, where wherever the ducks are, the carp are there. If you can see a big group of ducks in the middle, you'll see the carp nutting amongst them. Yeah, literally every time. Yeah, as soon as you learn which way round it is, whether they like them or hate them, like, you can use it to your advantage. But thank you for joining us, taking some time out from the family at Christmas, and I hope to see you in the new year. I hope you get over to Slovenia or Croatia with us this year at some point. Welcome anytime you fancy a trip.
That'd be nice, Jamie. I'd like that. Yeah.
Yeah, well, we're going to have a little social over there if you fancy a trip anytime. We're all geared up for it. Nice. For you. So,
brilliant. Sounds great.
Fantastic. Well, have a fantastic New Year. Are you out New Year's Eve?
No, I'm. Let's go fishing. I'm trying to gain the massive angles and feeling like death before in bay anymore. You know, it's an age game. You'll get there eventually.
Yeah, I'm close. I'm very close.
But, I think it's haters' way of protecting you from yourself. As you get older, it's a bit more sensible. You think, you know what? I've done this 50 times already. I don't want to be doing it again.
Well, I'm going out before New Year's Eve, and I'll probably be in bed recovering on actual New Year's Eve. So I very much doubt I'll see midnight. But yeah, we'll have a beer some point this spring, Frank. We'll get together, and yeah, hopefully I'll see you abroad next year. And
plus, I'll be seeing you at the. Northern Show.
Yes, you are. You are appearing on stage both days, is it?
No, on Sunday. I'm doing it.
Sunday. Fantastic. Yeah. Yes. You will see us there, 24th, 25th of February. Come and say hello to Frank. You'll be on the Sonic Stand all weekend, I guess, anyway.
Yeah, it'll be great. I'll look forward to seeing everyone. And I'll see you. Probably see you before then, Jamie.
Yeah.
And, anyway, Happy New Year to all the listeners, and to you, everybody I know, and even the guys I don't know. Have a good 2018, and hope your fishing is everything you want it to be, which is enjoyment at the end of the day. That's the main thing.
Thank you, Frank, and best wishes to you for next year. Let's hope it's a banger.
Yeah, all the best. All the best, Jamie.
The Carpcast, in association with the Northern Angling Show, the North's biggest fishing event at Event City Manchester, 24th and 25th of February. For early entry and the cheapest tickets, visit northernanglingshow.co.uk.
Yeah, so thanks to Frank for taking time out to talk to us. Now we hope to hook up with him in the new year. It's always a minefield of information and stories. He's one of our most liked guests, you think, Mark?
Oh, definitely. He's, even when I've watched him doing slideshows, he's fascinating. Not only is he, you know, he's a great storyteller, has some great stories, but when he starts getting technical, like he has done on the podcast before with his, you know, pop-ups and the flavours, and, you know, if we've done an episode with him where we go really in-depth with his rigs, because he's got so many rigs that he's just come up with. He's responsible for the Chod rig, isn't it? I don't know if anyone really knows that, but he is.
Yeah, and obviously was just speaking then about fishing a Chod rig in winter and tweaking it, pulling it back. And I know Basie, that's something Basie does quite a bit. You know, he'll move his hook bait, and it's very hard to do if you're fishing tiny spots in weed. But in winter, at this time of year, that could be the difference. You know, start with a Chod at long range and then just pull it back a couple of foot every 20 minutes. So you get, you know, there's a lot less weed about. The Chod resets itself.
Yeah, that is a common tactic on the commercial match venues, your little bomb.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So, another little tip from Frank. I hadn't really thought about this winter, but there are quite a few edges. And as we know, Frank loves the glow-in-the-dark corn. And his little tip there, get on the Enterprise site and the green... the yellow glow-in-the-dark fake maze. Although, you know, plastic's being banned on a lot of waters these days. Have you seen that?
I have, yeah. I think that's because it is, if you crack off, it is eternally fishing. You know,
yes.
It's not like a boiler that's going to break down and leave a harmless rig down there. It's eternally going to have the potential for a carp to pick it up and become tethered. So I can kind of, excuse me, I'm belching here. I can see the point behind it.
Yes, I mean, the first lake I saw to ban it was Dead Man's lake that Roger runs up in Manchester. I mean, that I think they'd gone down I think they'd found a snag or removed the snag, and there was literally dozens of rigs with fake maize on there, like impaled on this snag. And they just looked at it and thought, oh, that's bad. Like, they're out fishing in the lake, you know, fish are going to pick them up. It's sensible. I like using, you know, I like topping boilies with fake maize and stuff. So and the little, you remember from the Elstow One days, the you know, fishing a small hook, a single grain of fake maize, and fishing it over hemp and corn. I mean, it was devastating, wasn't it? Just the finesse of the rig, the way it just sinks, you know, the hook just sinks a single bit of fake maize, and then fishing it over hemp and corn. It's just a devastating method.
And cheap.
And cheap, yeah.
That's the main thing. But I'll tell you one thing I've been doing lately. I think it looks quite nice. If you get, you know, like a small 12 mil wafter, instead of using a hair stop, use like a red fake maggot instead.
Yeah.
That just seems to sit and look quite tempting.
Yeah.
I'm fishing over crumbs and maggots.
I was using, I don't ever seem to do it in the winter when we get the maggots out, but I was using, you know, like the maggot, what do you call them? The little rings for the to thread the maggots.
Oh, maggot clips.
Yeah, maggot liner or whatever, or maggot clips. Yeah, using maggot clips, we'll just load it with fake plastic maggots, which are obviously buoyant, and then using that as a hair stop, because they just clip onto the loop of your hair, don't they? And then there's a little gate on them, isn't there? And I haven't done it for a while. I haven't done it since last winter, but I had a 50 out of the Cops Lake last year doing that. Over maggots, hemp, some crushed boilies and stuff. I haven't done it this year. So
you haven't fished in the winter this year?
No, well, not yet. Obviously, I did fish last week, which was pretty cold. I did have a bite, actually. Oh, yeah. Well, we spoke about it, didn't we, on last week's show? I was on the phone to you.
Yeah. What? I did a couple of Facebook Lives as well on the Carcast page after that. It looked like quite a rave up at the Nash Christmas party down there.
It was good, yeah. It was that house is perfect. The effort they went to graphing up the rooms. Every room was done in a different style. Yeah, it was pretty epic. I bailed about 4 o'clock in the morning, I think, and went back down to the lake. I had the dog with me, and the dog was getting a bit paranoid with the noise and stuff. There's a big loud club system in there, but it invoked the usual negativity in the comments. This is everything that's wrong about this. This is why I gave up carp fishing. Why the fuck are you following a carp a carp page then? I'm just going to come on it and moan it. The carp anglers are all druggies. It's a Christmas party in a house on the side of a lake. Like, I don't get some people just like moaning. Ebenezer Scrooge is out on this time of year, isn't it?
Yeah, there's people out there who would moan about having nothing to moan about.
If you're unhappy with your life to the point you're just moaning about everything or everything offends you, do something about it, change it. You can find some way of earning money that you enjoy. You don't need to be miserable forever. You really don't have to be. You just got to break out the cycle.
Yes, or break out this great big tin of celebrations that I'm sat next to.
Is that going to make you smile?
Well, you won't make my wife smile when she comes in and sees I've smashed it.
I've got some books for Christmas. I've not had any fishing books. I'd say what we do have to do, talking about books, is we need to pick a winner for the Nash competition on the if you entered on the official Carpcast page, then all 30 or 40 of you clearly didn't read the post at the top that said no entries on this page will be counted, only on the original post in the Carpcast page. And yet there were still 30 or 40 entries on that page. But yes, if you cannot pass an intelligence test for reading the instructions, then it's not my fault if you don't win. But we had some cracking ones, actually, Mark. Did you have a look
through? Yeah, some good wins. I'm just using this famous internet connection at my house to recap. I've just got the Wheel of Doom at the minute.
Yeah.
But yeah, you have to join me. There was quite a few good ones. In the picture was Kevin Nash resting his chin in kind of like a blue, like a indulgence chin cushion.
Yes, we had no idea what or where that picture came from. I mean, it actually looked like a, you know, the whopper dropper, bait dropper type catapults, you know, for putting the ground bait balls out in. It actually looked like one of those, but you've done a bit of investigating. You reckon it's where they rest your chin when you're doing eye tests and stuff.
Yeah, that's what someone's actually mentioned, and That would make sense. If you're doing an eye test, you've got to keep your head quite still. So, you know, I've just finally got 135 comments. Are we going to go through them all?
This was on the actual Carpcast page, wasn't it?
It is. 12th of December.
Yes. There were a couple that stuck out to me, but I think I'm going to let you pick the winner. The winner is going to receive a copy of Kevin Nash's new book, which is available at all the shows and from his publishers as well. And it was a damn fine read. Some good story stuff in the start, a few stories I hadn't heard before, and a lot of technical stuff in the back. And it's Kevin kind of signing off. He'll be retiring soon, I think. And
it's well earned as well.
Yes, yeah, certainly. He did his final account DVD, and now he's done. And now he's done this. So, yeah, are there any that are sticking out to you at the minute?
There's one I thought was quite amusing. There's a Paul McHugh. He says, "That's the last time I get into a Facebook argument with Mark Holmes."
Yeah, I saw that one. Yeah,
that was one of the early ones.
Yeah,
but I think what I'll do, because it's unfair for me to just, like, you know, scroll down and just pick the first one that comes up. And after the podcast, I'll go through them all, and I'll pick a good one and I'll post it on the page. So if you listen to this, have a look at the page, and I'll message you anyway. I'll also let you know what. Who we've picked. I like this one, the Nash sex swing.
I'll tell you what we can do. We'll get another guest on now. So we did speak to a few people. We'll get a guest on, and while the guest is playing out, you can maybe have a good look through and scan one. There's a couple of guests we've been trying to get on. I've been trying to get them at the Northern Angling Show, and they always say no. I've been trying to get them on the podcast, and they're only young lads, and they're a bit of a YouTube sensation. And they always say no to everything. They're like, it's really easy for us to film each other, you know, two brothers, to film each other when we're completely in control, and we're just really uncomfortable doing anything else in public, any interviews, podcasts or anything. But while I was down at Nash headquarters for the party last week, Carl and Alex were staying in the lodge on the Saturday night. So I stitched them up a little bit. I went and got my laptop, got the microphone, set it up in front of them. They went, "Oh, what are you doing? You're editing a podcast." I was like, "No, I'm recording you two. You're going to give our listeners a Christmas message." And they came across absolutely fantastically. So let's have a listen to Carl and Alex. So I'm sat here on Kevin Nash's Church Lake with two YouTube legends in fishing, the young Carl and Alex. And now, they won't normally do any sort of recording other than their own stuff because they're busy all the time, but they can't get away from me now. I've got them. I've got them. You're in trapped. The lodge. Trapped, yeah. So it's nearly Christmas, lads. We're sat here. Mm-hmm. We must be crazy in the middle of winter on the Church Lake, but we're here for a reason, aren't we? There's a bit of a party going on tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. And whilst the rods are out, you've always got a chance. So before the party kicks off, get the rods out and see if something can happen.
Yeah, now there's all of us on here tonight. I've got a feeling that in the morning, it's going to be a nice fishy picture to be had.
It would be nice. We're covering the good areas, so yeah. Alex is here as well, so he'll...
Shout out to Alex.
He'll probably catch something, whilst I catch nothing, as normal.
Normally lucky in some way.
Would you say Alex is the luckier of the two?
I'd say I'm the better of the two.
I would definitely say he's the lucky one. Lucky little brother.
Does one of you catch more and the other catch the bigger ones?
I just catch more and bigger.
Ooh, ouch.
See, this is what we want. We want a bit of brotherly rivalry.
You can't avoid that with us two.
How long have you been doing the videos now? You looked very young on the first one. I think the first one I saw was on the Sitch, was it, with Paul Garner?
Oh, right. Okay, so we would have been making videos for about four or five years when that was made.
No way.
Yeah, we've probably like 10 years.
We've been going just over 10 years with the YouTube channel and
stuff. Yeah.
Wow. And is there... I mean, obviously, you're still working up at Nash and doing other stuff, so you're not retiring off YouTube anytime soon. But is there a financial incentive on YouTube? I know you guys get a lot of views.
A little bit. Like, it's minimal. It averages out. Like, every 1,000 views you get, the ads that show up, you get about £1. Yeah. Which, it helps us try and cover the costs of making the films.
Yeah, oh, that's good. At least there's something. What? How many subscribers do you think you have to become a YouTube millionaire?
Oh, like millions.
Millions.
Like you literally you need a million or more.
You need lots more than we have. Yeah.
We're small fish in a big pond when it comes to like YouTube, but it's fishing, and you know, putting fishing out there online is not done by a huge amount of people, and I think all the people that do it will agree that it's quite self-fulfilling. Even if it doesn't earn much, it feels good.
I know from audio editing and the little dabble I've had at video editing, it's the same even with the audio. Like, the better you want it, the longer it takes, and yep. You could probably never finish a film, I guess, if you really went for it.
Yeah.
You know, with dropping effects in on little things, you can embellish anything, can't you?
Yeah, you have to sometimes give yourself a deadline, otherwise you will just spend ages and ages. Yeah. Too long getting something.
So a couple of our films, like Reservoir Diaries, for example, we spent months, like literally,
really?
Well, 6 months was the campaign, and then the editing, we spent a good... What is your dog doing?
He's playing.
The dog is
rolling about.
A lovely time.
Yeah, he's rolling about on the sofa. Yes, dog, looking cheeky there. You're on the recording now, stealing Carl and Alex's limelight.
Nice. It's fine.
So, are you better at the editing as well, Alex? You just bump him in everything?
No, God. You're taking this too far, mate. No, we share out all the work, so neither one of us does all of the filming or the editing. We, you know, one of us will fish one week, another will film, and then we'll swap around the weekend after, you know. So we share it all out.
When I started trying to teach myself the editing... Come away, dog. When I started trying to teach myself the editing, obviously I went to your page as the benchmark. And I've watched a lot of videos, and some have got a lot of effects and stuff. What I noticed about yours is it was so clean, like the content was the best bit of it. I mean, the editing's good,
yeah,
but it seems like it's there when it's needed.
With a lot of productions, you go harder in the edit if the footage isn't quite...
Good enough.
Do you know what
yeah.
I mean? Like, if you can tell a story without fancy editing, then that's the best. That's often the best way to do it. For certain productions, like for example, if you see Urban Banks, the whole thing is the music and the upbeat, energetic, you know, the passion of Alan Blair.
Yeah.
So we bring that out with the editing as well. You know, we make it fast yeah. and exciting because Alan's a full on exciting guy.
Yeah.
But for other things, you've just got to. You know, show the fishing as it is, and yeah, it's nice to show a bit of emotion. It's nice to tell a bit of a story with the footage and the music and stuff. But yeah, it's just time consuming, man. It yeah. just takes so much time to put together what looks like a simple little film, but it's just yeah, hours and hours.
That's what I noticed about it. Like, I was expecting to see, because I know the Urban Bank stuff is fantastic. I know you guys do it. I was expecting to see lots of that trickery in yours, and it was there when it was needed. Every time there was a fill bit and some music came in, you know, some really clever like zoom effects and stuff on mm-hmm. on the changes of the beats and stuff, but it was subtle, and it was the content that was so good. It was just clean. I was really impressed with the actual
thank you,
just the way you did it. Like, as you said, you didn't have to go to town on the editing to make it look good. Mm-hmm. And then I watched one of yours, which was, I think it was like a diary piece that was a load of stuff that you couldn't fit onto the normal pieces.
Okay, yeah, like an update.
And that footage was one of them. Oh, what was it now? It's nearly a year ago I watched this. I think, I forget what it was, but it was a cracking bit of footage of, I can't remember if you were spinning or it was a pike or so. I can't remember what it was, but I remember thinking, how is that not A-roll? How is that not good enough to be on one of your normal bits of footage?
When you're trying to get out and make a video every Friday, as we do, there's a lot of throwaway content, you know, sessions that don't go quite perfectly. And then, you know, we collect up all of the bits and pieces, put them in an update video just to give some, or use up that content. Otherwise, it's just footage that's... wasted.
Oh, it's fantastic. When your wasted footage doesn't make it to the main stuff, then you know you're doing the right things. Well, I only got you on to say happy Christmas, and I wish everybody a new year, all the Carpcast listeners, because I know you have a lot of fans in our listeners. We get requested to get you on the show all the time, so I've kind of...
Brilliant. You've got us on.
Oh, you are. Well, hopefully we'll all catch a big kipper tonight and you'll see the video of it. Are you going to do some filming at the party or anything?
I don't know. It might not be very
broadcast
family friendly, but you know, if we catch a fish, it'll make it into a video. If we catch a fish, I'm not holding my hopes up. It hasn't been fishing too well, but you've got to be in it to win it.
Fantastic. Well, I hope wish you all the success
continued success next year as well. Cheers, guys.
Thank you.
Bye.
For all the news, check out cartfeed.com.
So a big thank you to the lads, Carl and Alex, two very switched on guys. They, I thought they'd come across really well. I don't know why they are uncomfortable doing stuff. That we might get a full interview out of them at some point, because they said that was perfectly fine doing that. So, yes, I'm going to twist their arms, and you will see them at the Northern Angling Show. They will be attending, although they won't be talking on stage. We're going to try and get them in one of the practical areas in the lab, I think. They definitely have a lot to offer, and certainly very clued up about YouTube and stuff. We had some in-depth chats about building audiences and stuff, and they're two very smart lads who've been at it a long time. So yeah, I'm glad I had to con them into giving me 15 minutes, but it's all good. Did you have a chance to have a look through the competition entries, Mark?
Yes, we've paused for a little bit longer there, so we are going to announce it now. We've had a good look through. Well, we both have, haven't we? So, I think we've found the winner. I think it's funny anyway. It's,
hang on. There was a couple worthy of a mention, I think, before that. One from one of our guests today, Frank Warwick. There's a couple that he put that made us chuckle. Do you remember where they were? There were two. In true Frank style, they were all sex themed. Listen, love, when I said I want you to pull a head off, I didn't mean this. That was one. I'm sure there was another one about a bollock dropper. So I apologise if I had a message of somebody that listens with their lad regularly. I'm extremely sorry, but Frank is known for being a little bit cheeky, but they're usually sex themed. That was the other funny one. Ever the innovator, Kev demonstrating the vinegar stroke head restraint, which stops you cricking your neck on those long, cold, boring nights in the Vivi. just underneath that one, actually, is one that you like, isn't it, Mark?
Yeah. Are we going to give this one the winner?
I think so.
Yeah. Daniel Johnston. His caption is, okay, Jamie, I'm ready to hear about the time you caught the rotund Cambridgeshire fish again.
It's quite topical. It proves Daniel does listen to the show regularly, so that's always good. I don't know who you are, Daniel, but please do get in touch with us. Send me an address, and I will post this book out to you in the new year. And what a cracking read it is to... have you seen anything out and about, Mark? We got anything to chat about on this fine Christmas? Well, it's not a Christmas Eve, but it's a Christmas time Eve.
Yeah, we're kind of in that twilight zone between Christmas and New Year. I think they call it the Turkey Sandwich Week.
Yeah, although ours is still in the... we've been so hungover since Christmas Day. Ours is still in the fridge, and it's cost me a fortune in takeaways since. Oh, I can't be bothered to get up and make sandwiches. It's just like, oh, you're KFC then. And it's pretty much how it's been since Christmas Day. We got pretty wasted Christmas Day night.
Yeah, I can't fault you. I was always me and my wife went over to my brother's for Christmas Day, so we don't have the turkey sandwich problem. But my wife, being a restaurant manager, is straight back at work, and I'm left to fend for myself. And I've got a shelf in the freezer. I've got all my fishing meal pots. You know, like, when she's out, I'll cut myself half a bolognese, eat it, and then freeze half for fishing. And I've been working my way through the ones in the freezer.
Yeah.
Can't be bothered to cook either.
Yes, we do overindulge. I'm going to get back on the health kick, I think, post Christmas. I don't know what day to start, because I don't want to start too early.
It doesn't matter when you start, as long as you start. Just do it.
Yeah, I'm going to...
do it.
Obviously, I chatted to Julian quite a bit today, and... Julian Cundiff, as we know, is a very healthy guy for a 55-year-old, he told me today. Cycles 50, 60 miles at a time. And he as he always does, inspired me.
Yeah, he's certainly one of the people who inspires me as well. So
he is.
I'm listening to him as well.
He's so driven. He gets out all the time for these short sessions, even in the winter. And it's not like these lakes are down the road. They're 45 minutes drive away. You know, I've got a number of lakes within 45 minutes I could go to if I was bothered. But he does. And, you know, he does his 3-4 hour cycle rides. And he's been at it all this time. He's so nice. Such a positive guy. He's a credit to fishing and a credit to human beings, I think. So we should hear from him. Feels like I'm in love. Just had the first time I met you. Yeah, yeah. Feels like I'm in love. Just had the first time I met you. And I'd like to welcome one of the nicest guys in fishing and the Carpcast favourite, Mr. Julian Cundiff. How are we doing, pal?
I'm very well indeed. Just sat on the bank at the moment. Very, very cold. Just been snowing. But the best time for bite is between 2 and about 6 o'clock. So I've got to be in it to win it, as they say.
You must literally fish more short sessions and day sessions than any person I've ever come across. The effort after, 30, 40 years is incredible.
Yeah. Well, it's just got to be done, mate. You know, I'm not going to catch them sat at home, and I don't want to be one of those people with, like, if only I'd... I don't want to be one of those people. So you have to do it, mate. You have to do it. I can do it at 55, and I'm sure most of our listeners can do it at 45, 35, or 25. It doesn't get easier as you get older, believe you me.
How far are you having to travel for some of these day sessions?
This is only 45 minutes, so it's not bad at all. So it's fair enough, you know. It's 45 minutes, the rods are out, got a flask of coffee with me. I've got the kettle, so single up makes a little few on the top of them, and fish for a bite. I think I had 7 on Christmas Eve, fishing from, I think it was about 2 o'clock till 5 o'clock. Just in the right window of opportunity. I could have sat there all morning, and I probably would maybe have had a bite, but just picking your time, isn't it?
What sort of stock are we talking about in these sort of lakes? They go up
to a double, so the sort of mid doubles, which is fine for me. You know, I'm just happy to get a bite in winter. If it was £30, it might mean more to somebody else than it means to me. It honestly would not make any more difference to me than catching 7.
What I'm getting at is, are you choosing lakes where that are pretty well stocked?
Yeah, this is a good stock. Yeah, this is a good stock of fish. It's probably about 4 or 5 acres, maybe about 100 fish. So it's a good stock of fish, but it's just a question of finding them. You could fish this lake and not have a bite. You have to find where they are. And I found where they are, which is very tight to some reeds. In winter, if there's one tip, it's get next to the reeds, because that seems to be where you get your bites in winter.
I always remember a winter water. I used to fish down south. The name will come to me in a minute. You might remember it. I think Briggsy had the first 40 out of there. It had a funny name, like Gertie or something like that.
It was
a Boyer Leisure water, and I only used to go there in the winter because A, it had a really big fish, but B, there was a load of reeds at one end, and it was absolutely guaranteed you fished up against those reeds and you could catch any time in the colder months. Do you think they hold heat or something? There's some reason why they like
I don't know. I think they do hold heat, and they're always the last place to freeze over because of the movement. And I think they also hold the last stocks of natural food, and they're always in there. I think the reeds are more fishable snags, so if there's no reeds, you catch them in the snags. But the thing with reeds, as long as you fish locked up, you're not going to lose them in reeds. You fish locked up and you're all right, whereas in snags you fish locked up and you can still bump them off in snags. But reeds, I never have a problem with reeds, you know. I don't lose them in reeds, certainly not in December, January time, but always reeds in winter, unless I see them somewhere else. I always have one on the reeds and then maybe fish the other one about. But if I get a bite off the reeds, both will go on the reeds.
Fantastic. That's a pretty good tip for anybody. Do you have a selection of waters that you go to in the winter?
I've probably got four, maybe five waters around here. I've got the canal. I've got two or three day ticket waters and one which is my syndicate water, which I'll pick and choose depending on conditions, on whether I fancy, you know, I'm limited time, so I want to go somewhere where I can get a bite. I have four or five waters. I'm not going to travel too far at this time of year, mainly because it's a long way to go if it's snowing, raining, packed, etc. This time of year especially, because everybody's super keen having got their Christmas presents.
I've not fished that way since I was a kid, and it's laziness, you know. I could arrange my tackle in such a way these days, you know, where I could have a rucksack and my scope rods or whatever, and literally just throw it in the car. And I was thinking you were going to say, it's 10 minutes away, but I've got lakes 40 minutes, 45 minutes away that I could go to, and I don't, because I don't know, maybe I'm lazy, but you've inspired me, I think.
I don't like to call people lazy. It's maybe the less driven, other things are more important to them. But I've always found that, believe you me, I hate getting up early in the morning. I hate, you know, leaving the warmth of the house and things like that. But I even hate more wasting opportunities. So I've got that sort of conscience that says, I don't want to get up. But the other bit says, do you know what? It's going to get to 5 o'clock this afternoon. You're going to think, I wasted an opportunity. So it's. I wouldn't say it's laziness. It's just what you're driven to do. You know, you're supposed to enjoy it. I enjoy it. If I didn't enjoy it, I believe you me, I wouldn't be doing it. Yeah. It hurts, but I enjoy it.
Well, it is a fantastic inspiration to us all. So, any little tips? What are you doing baiting wise?
My greatest tip is super sharp hooks. I can honestly say that, having had my hook sharpened now, I would say two or three times, I'm getting two or three times more bites on sharpened hooks than I do on normal hooks. You know, so whatever hooks you use, I have them sharpened, and I haven't sharpened because I can't sharpen them as well as the rigging guys do. And, you know, I've taken them to shows. I'll drop a handful of hooks in my hand, put my hand over them, open my hand and shake it. And on most normal hooks, maybe one might catch in the skin. Yeah. If they're sharpened, maybe eight or nine will catch in the palm, and you can't shake them off. Now, you know, I've watched all the videos and things like that. As far as I'm concerned, a lot of those fish should have been hooked, except that the hooks, you know, it wasn't tightening up to the lead and things like that. Sharpened hook, two or three times more bites, especially at this time of year. I'm getting maybe seven in the afternoon where I used to get one or two. You know, it's such an advantage. Whatever you use, Nash, Gardner, Fox or whatever, you'll not catch any less on a sharpened hook.
I used to have mine done. It's Lee, isn't it, at Rigging Tackle that does it. There are a couple of people out there as well. Shout out to Lee.
I do all these shows and people absolutely can't believe how good they are, and then they go and buy a beanie or a Ridge Monkey. No disrespect to either, but it's like, wow, okay, you have just seen how effective that hook is, but you'd rather have a new jumper. It's like...
when somebody who catches as many fish as you says, you know, you've gone from seven to... two to seven, you can't ignore that, can you?
I just watched Andy Little fishing years ago. I watched Andy Little fishing, and I thought I was good. And he just did that little bit extra using smaller hooks, which in effect he was using sharp hooks because they were smaller. He was catching 12, I was catching 4. He'd fine down and get more bites. And I realised it does make a difference. You can blame anything else. You can say it's luck, you can say it's time. But the guys who catch the most generally try hardest and don't turn down any opportunities.
Yeah, it's the 1%. I always remember Terry Hearn saying that years ago. If he does 10 things that maybe only a tiny edge, sharpening hooks, if you do 10 of them, you're 10% better than the guy in the next swim, you know, doing little things.
That's what, funny enough, that with obviously everybody knows that Carp was now being taken over by Carp Talk. I've written a couple of articles, and the second article is called 70%, which in effect everybody can get to 70% efficiency.
Yeah.
It's the last 30% that is a difficult. It didn't used to be 70%, it used to be 50 or 40%, but nowadays with the information quality tackle overload, the bar has been raised. So maybe 80%, it's the last 10, 20, 25% that the hardest, but the most, you can do it. It's just, we can all get to a certain level, but it's that extra few percent here, there and everywhere that make all the difference.
Fantastic. And what have we got in store for you this year? So you're doing a bit for the new kart world. Has the editor changed or what's happening?
Kart World is now published by Kart Talk, Bev and Mick. I presume they'll be advertising for a new editor. I don't know who the new editor is. I've done my first two pieces for it. So that's the February and March issue. What am I doing this year? I'm retiring. Yes, retiring from work.
Yeah. So we're going to expect more fishing, more fishing, articles.
Yeah. I'm doing an autobiography, a tell-all autobiography, which will be a vanity project, which in effect means it's, you know, I'm not doing it to make, you know, to sell 10,000, because you don't do that in books anymore.
No.
I'm just doing it because I want people to read what the real truth of, you know, carp fishing life and balancing it is like. It's not like you read in the magazines. It's not professional football. It's not what you think, you know.
Yeah. Most people know the dream of being a full-time carp is probably not a realistic one these days.
No, for every Terry Hearn, Dave Lane and Jim Shelley, you know, there are hundreds of thousands that, or tens of thousands, who would love to try and do it but can't, you know. So, you know, get a qualification, you know, treat it what it is. It's a sport, it's not a job.
Yeah, wise words. The trouble is we love it so much, it stirs up passion in people.
It's an addiction.
Yeah.
It's an addiction, you know, whether you're riding a push bike or whether you're fishing for carp, whether you're supporting your favourite team or your favourite group, it's an addiction, and there's that balance between addiction, obsession and enjoyment. So, and that's why we love it so much. If we didn't love it so much, it wouldn't be such an addiction.
It looks like you're addicted to bike riding as well, though.
I just enjoy, funny enough, carp fishing is not relaxing to me at all, because I can't sit there, my conscience won't allow me to try it 70%, 80%, see a fish top and not move.
Yeah.
So I can't actually relax. I love the scenery and I love it, but it's not relaxing at all. Whereas bike riding, just get on the bike, there's no music, there's nobody talking to me, there's nothing, and I just ride, and it's just literally my own little world, and get away from it. I go and look at waters. It's just my get away from it, yeah. But I'm addicted to the freedom that bike gives you. I mean, be it a motorbike or a push bike, it's that, your own little world. Whereas carp fishing, I can't just give it 70%.
Yeah.
It's not relaxing.
Well, when did you start push biking more seriously? I ask because
I started push biking more seriously about 3 years ago. I was sort of mad. I thought, why have a push bike when I've got one that's just got wheels on it, which has got a motor on it? And I did it once or twice, and all of a sudden I thought, you know, I feel really better here. Like most men of a certain age, if I ever put weight on it, it was on my hips. And after I'd done a couple of bike rides, 10 or 12 miles, I actually genuinely could see more change and feel more than in my home gym. And I sort of got it up to 20 miles. And when I did 20 miles, I thought I was Chris Froome. I thought, I am the boy.
Yeah.
And then I realised when I watched other people. And I just find it's one of those things I click with it that really makes me feel fitter. And the fitter you are, the better you are. You know, healthy body, healthy mind. If you feel good, I find a fish better. The more healthy I am, the fitter I am, the more I'm likely to tough it out in the worst of conditions. It gives you that mental strength. You know, in fact, somebody said to me, 62 miles, that's forever. It's like saying you need to drive 4 hours to go fishing. It feels like forever, but when you actually do it, it's not that bad. It's good.
How long does 50 miles take?
I can average maybe 17 mile an hour on a good push, so
yeah.
3 or 4 hours, you know, with a couple of coffee breaks. So, you know, I could go faster, but, you know, it's just a matter of enjoying it. I do it to enjoy it. You know, I don't do it to do 19 mile an hour and get a personal best. I just do it to free my mind. I find it's like driving to a water. I love driving to waters when it takes me 2 or 3 hours, because after about an hour, I can actually forget the rest of the world and concentrate on my fishing. So it's that, you know, if you're doing 20 minutes, you can't really unfocus from what you were doing at home.
Yeah.
But after 2 hours in the car, I don't put the music on, I don't have anything. I can literally turn from being Julian Cundiff, the home guy, the court official, to a carp angler. And that's what push biking does to me. It allows myself to free myself of all the other crap in my life, for want of a better word.
I do exactly the same driving. Like I've always driven sort of 3 hours. 3 hours each way is the norm for 90% of the lakes I've fished the last 15 years. And I'll get to the destination, realise that I haven't had the radio on, I haven't spoke on the phone. It's me and my thoughts going round. And I get there a better person because I've worked through a couple of things that might have been on my mind or problems, or made a plan about something. And it's like, some people don't like solitude, do they? I mean, it's...
I love it.
Yeah, me too. I can be on my own for a week, 2 weeks, speak to nobody and not miss it, you know. But some people like someone around all the time.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I like people, but whether I don't ride with bike riders. I love to see them at cafes, but the last thing I want to do is be sat before looking at 20 men's bottoms. Maybe 20 women's bottoms, but not 20 men's bottoms.
I know what you mean.
Not for me at all.
Fair enough. Well, I hope you catch one this afternoon.
Yep. The next hour to 2 hours, certainly, yeah.
Do you always find it's afternoons in the winter?
For me, yeah, always afternoons. A number of lakes have turned up and I've been up at first light down there for 6 o'clock in the morning. What a waste of time. All I'm doing then is securing the swim then.
Yeah.
I'm securing the swim next to the reeds, next to the snags or whatever. But I've never found it been particularly good. I might get a quick bite, but that's it. But I found most of the waters I've fished, 2 o'clock while 7 o'clock in the evening is the best time for a bite.
There was a lake when I was keen, really keen, you know, 4 hour sessions and stuff as a kid when I could walk to the lake. And I remember one winter I found this spot and you could set your clock by it every single day. It was 2 p.m. every day. I would get one, maybe it was two rods then, and both rods would go if I got them on this spot. And if I had it slightly away from this spot, it didn't go. And it was quite a hard cast because, again, it was a lake full of reeds, but it wasn't actually near the reeds, it was open water, but you had to cast at a funny angle, and with the gear that we had in those days as well, it was tricky. But if you got it right, it always went, and it
makes you a better angler. Short session fishing makes you a better angler because it teaches you ain't got any time for mistakes. You have to get it right, because if you go past that bite time, it's a long time till bite time number two comes up. So short session angling, a bit like match angling, teaches you to be ruthless.
Yeah, and generally the fish are very localised, so if you can find them, you can have some silly hits in the winter.
I'm sometimes catching more in winter than in summer.
Yeah, it's crazy. If you get the location right, and it's a day that they want to feed. I mean, you must know from, you see fish in a pond or whatever, and they can be dormant for days, and then one day, for no reason whatsoever, they're all active out there looking for food. And if you're fishing on one of those days in a localized area, you can have a load of fish.
Yeah, that's how I always think. I always think, even if I have a blank, it doesn't bother me, because I think, okay, that lake owes me a better session next time. So 3 or 4 blanks, and then you will have a massive hit. The trick is, when you are on them, is to absolutely milk it to death. You know, it's not a question of I've had 2 or 3 and that's good. I want to catch 5, 6, 7, 8. Not because I'm greedy, but because I know that generally it balances out. You have your bad times, you have your good times, and if you fish it as efficiently as you can when you're on them, you've got to milk it then, because you might have 2 or 3 sessions where they're not having it. They will literally ignore it. No matter how good you are, and I've seen it, they won't pick that bait up. There's some days they'll look at it and they will not touch it.
Well, I've seen on the Facebook, the live feeds, there was one guy on one lake had 2 fish in the net while he was playing another one. It's today, I don't know why, maybe we've had a little mild spell leading up to Christmas, and it's snowing in places today. I was gonna, it was 2 degrees in Blackpool last night. We had frost, but
it's only 2 degrees here, very cold, snowed earlier.
But I don't know, maybe that's the trigger, a little mild spell, and then the first cold day.
Yeah, two, I always take two nets. I've always got pre-tied traces. I always mark my lines. I've always got slime things, because the day that you don't have two nets, the day that you don't mark your line, the day you don't actually know exactly what tree you're casting at and write it down, is the day they're having it off that tree spot. Yeah. So, you know, as soon as that fish is in the net, I just cut the hook length off at the loop, and I wang another one out on the money, top it up with two or three or four free offerings, and then I'll bother about photographing the fish. I sometimes have two or three in the net,
yeah,
and no rods left, because it could be localized.
It's a dream in winter. So just quickly before we go, what sort of bait you're putting out when you get there then?
I always start with a single pop-up, and generally if I'm to the bite within a half an hour, I will either spawn some crumbed up. I tend to use the Nash Bay Amber Strawberry, which is very white and pale,
yeah.
And I crumb that up and add liquidized sweet corn and a little bit of hemp and just deliver it with a little spawn. I don't do it to start with, because I always think there's maybe a bite when I cast out, even if I know there isn't. I always fish single up baits, but then if I'm going to fish in maybe half an hour or whatever, I will just do, because I'm not fishing at long range, a couple of spawns off crumb, fish a single up baits over the top, and then when I leave, I'll catapult a few around. That's what I generally do, maybe fish a little stringer, that kind of thing, yeah, a little mash bag or just single freebies.
Fantastic. Well, best of luck, and look forward to seeing you.
I catch one.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. I'm sure we'll see the pictures come this afternoon.
It's on Facebook. Yeah, I put one up a couple of days ago, Christmas Eve, with the old Christmas hat on, just to show it could be done.
Yeah. Well, we'll see you at the Northern Angling Show.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to both days. I'm looking forward to seeing you all on the rig area, where I'll have plenty of special guests and lots of freebies to give away.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for your time, Julian.
All right. See you soon, Jamie.
Cheers, pal.
Bye, mate.
Listen to the Carpcast on iTunes and subscribe through the podcast app on your iPhone or iPad. For Android users, find us on the Stitcher Radio app. Go to Google Play and download Stitcher Radio for podcasts. Add us to your playlist and click listen to hear us anytime you like. Don't forget to enable offline listening if you wish to save your data on the bank. We're also available on the SoundCloud app under the Carpcast, or check our website at www.thecarpcast.com. Remember, listening through an app will recall where you were up to when you get that screamer, or you could always make a whip. The fish, of course.
I'll tell you something interesting I saw. Having had the permission to fish the Copse Lake to get some of the fish out, as you know, as we've documented on here, the lake's finally been drained down now. And I saw it for the first time last week. Have you ever had a look at a lake that you fished quite a lot when it's got no water in it?
No. I've seen, you know, pictures of lakes that have been drained, and there's, you know, the famous pictures of, you know, old Fox Pool and then Yateley North Lake. But, you know, I've seen pictures of Pit 6 on the A1 complex when that was drained right down. That was quite eye-opening. But not one that I've actually spent a lot of time on. No.
No, well, I saw the North Lake at Yateley when that was drained down. That was the era when I was fishing on there. But I'd never cast a lead in there. So, you know, like something that maybe you'd felt, or some humps or spots or whatever. Like, we spoke about it with Paul Harris on his interview, didn't he? Because he'd spent a lot of time fishing the North Lake. Definitely check that episode out as well. Paul, top guy, came across really well. But having fished the Copse a lot and then seeing it drain down, there were no spots that I didn't know about, but the spots were nothing like what I pictured. And I even went out in a boat on the Copse a few times, and I saw how the fish had like burrowed into the island a little bit, but until the water had gone, I never realised the extent of it. And I've just sent you a load of the pictures, Mark, and what do you make of it?
Yeah, are you sure there was just carp in there and not some deep sea copse monster with a great big mouth that's just taking a bite out of the island? Because that's what it looks like.
So the Copse is two islands, sort of not very wide, almost like cigar sort of shaped islands. And it's very weird because, like, on one side, and it was a dead area of the lake, I never really saw the fish up there. And they used to get up there, but shallow end. It seems to have silted over quite a bit, and just it always looked dead. Anyway, that side of the island down there is completely untouched. It's just a slope coming off the island and into the lake bed. The other side of it is where I had one of the 50s, and I know where DNA Jason, his friend, had a 50 from the corner spot, which I've sent you a picture of, Mark. And spot on the, there's one side of the island, you can see three bites out of it, as it were, outside the island. The right hand one, where the roots are, you can see that they're burrowed underneath the roots. That's where Jason's mate had one of the 50s, Jason Trope. And I had one of the 50s from the spot to the left of it. These spots, as Mark just said, they've been eaten away. And I said to Roger and Alan and stuff that were down there, do you think it's rubbing or do you think it's eating? It's like, it's definitely eating. They must have done it with their mouths because of how deep it goes back. And there's also holes, like there's holes in the bottom, and then they've like took a chunk out of the island, but a significant chunk. It's not like there's just a little indentation. It's gone in a good few feet into the island and underneath the roots and stuff. And what do you think they're after? They're definitely after something in the ground or the earth.
They've got to be getting something to keep going back to the same spot. And if it was just something that is randomly, you know, everywhere, you'd think, you know, there wouldn't be any particular one-off spot. It'd just be, you know, dimples everywhere. But these are very, very localized.
Yes.
So
very much so. There was one corner of the lake that was full of undulations that we never knew were there. Like every spot that we were fishing is one of the spots that I've sent you pictures of that we saw. There's no surprises there, but except for what they look like were extreme compared to what we thought we were fishing on. But there was one quarter of the lake that was just up and down, like all over the place. But it was very weedy, so it was hard to fish that corner of the lake anyway. You were fishing gaps in the weed. You could never drag a marker over it. But it was crazy, like looking at something that, you know, you think you know pretty well. I was glad that there were no spots that we didn't already know about. I'll tell a lie, there was one. There was quite a small chunk bitten out of one of the islands that was usually covered in weed, but that was a definite spot. But do you remember watching the Simon Scott video when he drained down one of his breeding lakes?
It was called something like a lake with its pants down or something like that.
Yeah, so it was a pretty interesting video. Now, obviously, this is a lake specifically done for breeding fish. So there's no significant features in it except for these reeds all the way down the edges, and the water was drained down because they were netting the fish. And at random points along the reeds, there were carp holes, weren't there? They were like just dips. Yeah. Now, why did they choose there and not like 10 yards further up, because they were pretty spaced out, weren't they, the carp holes?
Do you know what's just come to my mind was it's something that is not, you know, on the surface of the lake bed but is, you know, several inches down, and once they, you know, they break through, they break the crust, so to speak, they keep going to that same spot where it's already down to that level and just keep hitting it there. That's the only thing I can think of.
Not sure, but I mean, some of the ones Simon Scott, they were similar sort of size. When he was studying them, they were similar sort of size to these same ones. Obviously, they were the same sort of size on the lake bed. You know, they were a good foot or two deeper. But it was how far they'd gone into the island as well that was the crazy bit. What Roger and I have noticed on the Church Lake, Church Lake's a bit bigger than the Copse, and the islands are less of a feature. They're a much flatter incline coming off it. Like they're not as much of a drop as on the Copse Lake. So they don't seem to be that great up to the islands. Whereas, you know, we had a few fish tight to the islands on the Copse, but the Church Lake, whenever you find a spot, it's always deeper, like a foot to 2 foot deeper than everything around it. And that's how Roger and I have been looking for spots all year on the Church Lake. You know, you're led around and all of a sudden it just goes down 2 foot deep, and you can guarantee it's hard and you guarantee it's clean. 100% the fish have done it, and, you know, they're the spots we've been catching off. So it's good to, like, picture what they're doing. But obviously they were abnormally large carp in the Copse. You know, the fish are in there from sort of 30 to 60 pound. You know, they're they're not a standard size fish. Same in the church, really, but it's just crazy to see what the fish have done. But I just really want to know what they're after. Is it salt? Is it, you know, some minerals or something they want? Like I said, they've actually eaten under the roots of the trees on the islands and stuff, so the roots were just sticking outside. It was truly crazy, but even fishing any other lake now, it gives you a clue in what to look for when you're leading around or feeling, or if you're using like a deeper pro or something, you know, you're leading around, all of a sudden one bit's like 2 foot deeper for no real reason. That's the spot you want to bait.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've no doubt that you'll speak to Kevin about it next time you record with him for the podcast, but have you asked or spoken to him what his reaction is to these holes, what his thoughts are?
I haven't really. I've not really had an in-depth chat with him. We did record a Christmas message with him, and it's probably a good time to play it out now. I'd like to welcome Kevin Nash at this festive time.
Hi, Jamie.
How are you?
I'm good. I already had a couple of mulled wines this morning. So this is our last day, which in reality, normally everyone's starting to get festive around lunchtime. And they're having two big parties tonight. The company's got a Christmas party. Then Alan's set a rave up, which I think starts at midnight. It's mad.
Yes, well, I'm, as you know, I'm fishing. I've hung about in the hope of catching a carp, a vain hope of a winter fish, but mainly for the rave at midnight. So they've got a load of DJs, Function One sound system, the decor in the rooms. I mean, how you've let your house be used for this, I don't know.
Well, I think you would be pointing out, James, is not my house. It's a derelict house next door, which I eventually want to knock down. I certainly wouldn't let them do what I've done in my house. They've got graffiti artists in there now, spraying all the walls.
The attention to detail is amazing. I'll have some pictures of it that I'll post sometime in the new year. But yeah, the one room they've decorated in, Alan's old record covers. So it's got 12-inch records stuck to the roof and all four walls. It's amazing when you walk in. They've exhausted the Nash Depot of camo netting, I think. The whole house is camo netted. One room's just got newspapers stuck all over the ceiling, walls and everything. The detail's incredible. Every room's been dressed individually, but yeah, well, what a top boss for him allowing them to use the gaff.
It's Christmas.
Yeah, well, you won't be saying that when the police are knocking on the door at 5 a.m. going, why is there 150 people next door? And it'll be like the raves in the 1980s with the convoys turning up.
Well, paying the tickets, you know, they've printed tickets, didn't they? And it is a secret location, isn't it? You know, he hasn't announced a location yet.
Yeah, there'll be convoys meeting on the M25 at midnight. But yeah,
it's going to be dead funny if it backfires on him. There's people now searching around where the music's coming from, and he gets loads of gate crashes. But
well, as far I've got my bivvy to retire to on the lake if it all gets a bit too crazy. So I might even be asleep by the time they get back. Anyway, they're all going to be drunk back from the. Where's the office party then? Where's that?
The office party is in Billericay somewhere. I don't know. Is it in some circus venue or something? But
really,
yeah. I'm not a party pooper, but my take on Christmas parties now is that the food is half the quality and twice the price, you know.
Yeah.
And they really try and ram you in. I notice on this one they've got to get there at 6 o'clock in the evening, so you know, they've obviously got a limited number of chefs and waiters, and they're trying to, you know, run it like a canteen. So yeah, I'm missing that one. I remember the quiet night out with some close friends. The last party I went to was my 60th with all the boys, and I was the only one dancing at 4:30. The rest of them, you know, couldn't keep up with me, and they was all flat out drunk. So yeah, I don't want to show them up this year. So
they did a pretty good job at that party as well, didn't they? Yeah. It was there's one
three
thing
marquees, wasn't it?
One thing, you know, Alan does, if you ever seen any of the Nash stands on the shows, he goes to town. He's only it's only held back by you, really, saying you don't spend that much, Alan. he loves to put the effort in, doesn't he?
Well, in terms of my 6th party, say Alan and my son arranged it, I just don't want to know what it cost. You know, I really never want to know.
Yeah, it's crazy. So it's Christmas today. Today's the last day. Tomorrow is what they call Black Eye Friday, which is where everybody goes out after work, but you're finishing today.
The only reason we finish today, because this is the last day the carriers will ship out, you know, so there's no point in us being in tomorrow. You know, we can't get any gear out for the shops. So yeah, last day today and back on January the 2nd.
And we've got all the new stuff. We should have it all in by January, shouldn't you? All the new products we saw at the launch.
It's most of it has been in and gone. The hide, that is the one we're really all, you know, excited about. That comes, well, I think there's official launch date for the hide is the 27th, if that's a Saturday, 27th or 28th of January. There's a few other little bits, but yeah, the problem we got is, especially with the clothing, what we anticipate we will sell this winter, we've sold out in a lot of things, you know, especially the parkas and the puffer jackets. We're desperately trying to replenish, but you know, with you know, everyone having their holidays in February in the Far East, I think it's unlikely before March, but hey, you know, I guess it's better to have that problem than not being able to sell it. But yeah, the new clothing range has been a massive success.
Fantastic. Well, we got you on to wish the Carpcast listeners a happy Christmas and a prosperous new year. Have got any tips for us for the coming year when everyone gets the rods out again?
Oh, when they get the rods out again or winter fishing?
Well, it's something, I guess with this, we've got a mild week this week. We're in double figures currently as I speak. So,
winter fishing tips. I think the key one to me is it's hard enough out there. It's cold. It's miserable. So make sure you've got the right kit and clothing, but importantly, you know, lower your targets if need be. Find a water where you can actually get a take and a bite, because that's what fishing's about, you know, getting some action. You know, I see little point on sitting on a ball breaker syndicate water where you only had three or four in the summer, you know, for example. You know, go and enjoy yourself, you know. Be flexible, work at it, move your rods around a lot, trying to find where they will hold up, you know, because certainly they do, you know, go into very small groups and really do, you know, stick to just certain areas. You know, a couple of years ago, I put the Echo Sounder across the church every day of the winter just to see the behaviour, and basically spent the whole winter just split into two shoals, you know, all tightly grouped. If it's a pressured water, think of alternative baits, because for sure they're not hungry and they've been caught enough on bodies. I've done really well on snails in the winter before. Don't forget the zigs, and my phone's ringing. Before I answer that, yeah, hey, all you listeners, have a great Christmas and a brilliant 2018.
Thanks, Kerry. So I'd like to welcome another contributor of 2017 to the Carpcast. It is the Quartermain Man, one of the nice guys in fishing. Would you please say hello to Mr. Danny Fairbrass? How are we doing, Danny?
I'm really good, mate. Really good. Thank you. Merry Christmas and all that.
Yes, Merry Christmas to you. Well, it'll be Happy New Year almost by the time the show goes out. So what's going on next year? We got anything exciting?
We Thinking Tackle's relaunched. So we shot it all last year, from April through till November.
Yeah.
Loads of different waters, mainly at home, but a couple abroad. Loads of different people in it. Very much back to the original Thinking Tackle sort of format of me and a guest or two, or Simon Scott and a guest or two with him. And just, you know, the story of the session, basically. So it's not, it's technical, but it's not all step-by-step like masterclasses. So it is more of a story of the session. So that comes out, I think we're aiming to launch it the end of March. And what we're doing, the show we made, Daryl and I went to one of the New Embryo Lakes in Oxford last April, right at the start of April, when the leaves are only just going back on the trees, and basically because the show is going to come out this coming March, it's exactly the moment when you would be doing that kind of fishing. So that's why we've delayed it for a year, so that when people watch it, if they feel they want to copy any of the tactics and put them into their own armoury, it is as current as it can possibly be, because it is that month that they're watching it in. So that was the idea all the way through the season, that each of the shows would come out almost exactly a year later, so the tactics transferable the next time the viewer went fishing. So A lot of work, but you know, hopefully it's going to look really, really smart when it comes out. It's only online, so we're not doing it through TV anymore. For two reasons. One, TV stops you from explaining how you really are fishing because of all the advertising regulations. So it's always very frustrating on TV that you can't say I'm using a wide gape. You have to say I'm using a hook with a wide gape. You can't say a wide gape hook. It's crazy, you know. And it's not that I want to plug everything. I just want to share how I'm doing it. So if it makes sense to someone else, they can copy that. And it might be with somebody else's wide gape pattern of hook. It might not be ours. So be it. You know, as long as they're fishing better and putting another fish in their net as a result, then my job's done. You know, and with telly, you can't go into that much detail. And the other thing is, we're having it translated into all the main European languages. So when it goes out on YouTube and on our website on a Sunday evening, you know, it's available in all the countries with the subtitles for all those countries at the same moment. So that everybody gets to see it at the same time. And then each month there'll be another one, you know, 4 Sundays time, 7 o'clock Sunday evening, it'll come out again. So it'll be very much pitched like a TV show, and it'll look like a TV show, but you'll be watching it online. So, that's the shape of things to come.
It's very interesting that I find with the advertising, because we're paying for a load of TV advertising this year for the Northern Angling show that we've never had before, and it's been a bit of an introduction to me as to how it all works. And you know, you're buying sort of slots and stuff that have a certain rating, and I'm sure you know all this with the advertising.
That's what it's all about, mate. It's all about advertising. It's all about, you know, the ITV shows that we do, it's all about viewing figures and how much can they sell the ads for between the sections of the show. Yeah. And the more viewers you've got, you know, the more advertising revenue, the more you could actually command for a show. But, you know, with ITV, we've had to do the shows for nothing to start off with, you know, and it's cost a ridiculous amount of money, 50 grand a show, roughly, to make Mr. Carp. You know, in the hope that people make the connection between the lads on the show and our brand, and buy them a few more things as a result of it, you know, because if they don't, then the show's not paying for itself, you know. So it's a big, big leap of faith to get into that world. And I don't know if you're finding it, but TV people are a law unto themselves, you know, and they're holding all the cards that, you know, you're the little guy. And you sort of, you know, all credit to Ali, because he, you know, he operates with these people all the time, talks their language, you know, and makes the very best of the relationship. And I'm sure you're probably finding that, you know, they're the ones making all the demands.
Yeah, I mean, the company we've got, that they seem pretty good. They're doing quite a bit of other stuff for us as well, but obviously they're an intermediary between us and the TV advertising. It's actually working out quite well, because we're in a niche industry, because what they're saying is a lot of the fishing shows, they don't make the ratings to be called a TVR, is it? So basically we can pay for like 20 slots and we can end up with like 80, because you know, a lot of fishing shows they're repeated on in the daytimes, and you know, they're all over the place.
Yeah.
And it's the big shows that obviously get the ratings, but yeah, it's a bit of a world that seems, I don't know, I mean, is it stitched up? Have they done it this way that you can't even show a packet of hooks or because they want all the money?
It's ITC regulations. It's called undue prominence.
Right.
So you basically, you can't mention a product and then see the packet of that product as well.
Right.
You know, so if you said wide gape, you could see the hook with it on a rig, no problem. But you couldn't see a packet of wide gape hooks in that same shot.
Yeah,
that's called undue prominence. So, and that's what the guys at Monster Carp and Fishing All Stars and Big Fish Off, they're up against that. So, you know, when people go on
social media and say, oh, there's no detail, we don't want to see all this going off the lake and going driving and shooting guns and all that. We literally cannot put any more fishing into the shows than is already in there, you know, to keep those people happy and have that balance so that the general public will watch the show as well as anglers. You know, everything has to be dumbed down. You can't have too many technical sections. You can't have this undue prominence, you know, and like I say, all credit to the three lads who are in the show because they deal with that expertly well. And I find it very frustrating because I want to share how I'm doing it. I want people to think, God, that looks like a good idea. I want to try one of them next time I go fishing. I mean, if that guy then catches a carp as a result of that, then you've really secured him as a viewer for that show because you've made a difference to his fishing, you know. And we don't get in Masterclass and this new thinking tackle, I absolutely have the opportunity to do that, but in TV world you don't, and you just have to hope that you know, you give as much angling across as you possibly can, and the hope that if people want to know more about it, they start delving into it a bit, they find us, and then they see all these other films that we produce or articles we produce, and they get their information that way, you know.
Yeah, well, one of the good things about the route you're going down is our research found that fishermen are very happy watching YouTube for their content. You know, the company came across that it's an accepted form of media for carp fishermen. You know, they're very happy to watch films, feature length stuff, you know, short things, as I think we've seen the last couple of years, if the content's good, people are happy to see the product. A, because they want to know what you're using, and B, because they don't mind seeing a few adverts to watch free content. You know, people don't mind that.
No. This whole thing is a massive discussion in angling. And like I said, I just think I'm using that, and I'm using it because I consider it to be the best thing for the job. So I'm going to show you it. I'm not using it because I need the £3 I'm going to get from the sale of that product, you know, and that is life or death for me. I could never, ever do something like that where I'm pushing something just to earn a few quid out of it. Never in a million years. It's got to do the job for my fishing, which is, for me, the most important thing in the world is I fish at the best level I possibly can. And then if it can then add something to someone else's fishing, then you're just sharing your knowledge, your experience and everything else. And, you know, yes, there are people out there where it's blatant plug-in and you know the product's probably not doing the job very well, or the person's only using it because they're being paid to use it, and they bounce around from company to company to company, and everything they use is good when they're there, and then they go off somewhere else. You know, I've been saying the same message for 25 years now, you know, and you look at our sponsored angler team, doesn't really revolve very much, you know. It stays the same people because they've got confidence in the stuff and they like being part of us. And I think, you know, in every other walk of life, every time we turn on the television, we're all being sold to all the time, and that's okay, right? If it's Tesco's or Amazon or whoever, that's all fine. But when it's fishing, you're the devil. You do it in fishing. Do you know what I mean? I can be sold to by every other company, but because I've met Danny at a fishing show, or I think I know him or whatever, he's having me over by trying to show me something. But I'll quite happily go into Tesco's and be led by their advertiser, spend £200 on a Christmas shop, but that's different. But it isn't. You know, it happens for our entire life, but fishermen seem to resist it so much, you know, when it's in angling. I can't get my head around it.
I think what it was, this is just my opinion, but there was a time when carp fishing really boomed. Magazines were the only form of media. It was kind of pre, you know, all the YouTube, great YouTube content out there and stuff. And what happened is the magazines cashed in on that, and every other page was an advert. And I think there was a bit of a backlash for a few years because it, you know, there was as many adverts as there was content. And I used to see in the early days of forums, I used to see a lot of backlash against that. And then we got all these other forms of media since, you know, we can watch YouTube on our phones now, and, you know, we're carrying mini computers. And to be honest, the online content has got better, and because it's free, they're not buying a magazine for it. I've not really seen any moans since, you know, it's kind of evolved into this digital content, and I don't think people mind seeing them now on you know, in stuff, because they're getting it for free. It's in their hand. They can watch it in bed, in the morning, when they wake up, whenever they want. And you know, the side bit of that is, yes, you know, companies are producing these films. I mean, some of them are feature length films, as you said. You were spending 50 grand a show on Thinking Tackle, and you're now going to be putting them out on YouTube. People appreciate that.
Sorry, mate, to correct you, not on Thinking Tackle. My budget for Thinking Tackle is about 50p. Ali's budget for Monster Carp is 50 grand.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm bottom of the food chain at Calder, mate. So I'm trying to do everything on the tiniest budget possible. But I mean, you know, maybe that is the attitude of people. They accept it more because they're getting it for free. But I would hope that people watch something and think, do you know what, I've really enjoyed that, I've got something from it, from my fishing, and I don't feel like I've been sold to. I've just been shown a load of new techniques that's going to catch me more fish.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go out and use the stuff that create those techniques to add it to my armoury. That's how it works. You're sharing the information. And, I mean, I agree with you, with the magazines. Well, you know, obviously we dealt with them right the way through that whole period, and yeah, if you weren't advertising, you couldn't have a feature in that magazine.
Yeah,
you know, and you know, and it was, you know, Tom, Dick and Ali were in there, who had 5 minutes fishing experience and had caught a few doubles in the odd 20, and they were in these magazines preaching about stuff because the company who sponsored them advertised in that magazine, so they got their slot. And that's wrong, in my opinion. I always thought, you know, people should get in there on their own merits. If they've got something to contribute and to the reader, then they deserve to be in there. It don't matter who they represent, do you know what I mean? And those guys, you know, I used to like reading articles from those guys that you could tell were at the absolute top of their game, and you know, had really hit upon something. And you could read what they'd written and add something to your own armoury, so the next time you went, you could apply it. And that's what sharing the information is all about. And that's why I would hope fishing has grown as much as it's grown, you know, because of that sharing of information. It's not a secretive little cult, you know, like it was back in the 80s. But, you know, when one of my mates, his brother was fishing over at Hainault Park, and he wouldn't even show his own brother his weeks. And then he saw him sitting in his garage, and he saw the bait hanging an inch and a half below the hook. And he told us all, we went, shut up. There's no way the bait's not on the hook. So we knew about the hair rig probably 18 months before we started using it, and we completely and utterly dismissed it because it just seemed so outlandish at the time. That was the way it was back then. You know, now it's the complete opposite. And I do sort of feel a little bit for people coming into it, because there's so much information nowadays. Who do you listen to? Who's right? You know, because it all works, doesn't it? What you advise people to do works, what I advise people to do works, and there are different things used in the same situation. Which one do you choose? And that must be quite difficult.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, you must be... Do you do much fishing for your own pleasure? You've got much planned this year? Is it literally working?
Yeah, coming up. Yeah, I'm changing things around a fair bit, actually, because I've done so much work-based fishing, whether it be... I did 2 weeks at Gigantica last year in the summer as a bailiff, so, you know, not in the draw. So you're having the last swim on the lake that nobody else wants.
Yeah.
You know, you're working from 7 till 9 at night, doing the toilets, helping with the food, coaching people with casting or helping them tie rigs or doing pictures for them, whatever. Did a couple of weeks of that, which was brilliant. It was probably my best 2 weeks of the year.
Really?
And it basically went on like that. Everything I did, we went back to Gigantica to stock more of the babies that we've grown on. You know, we did various filming projects. I took all the European salesmen to a lake called Toisil in France, which we made a couple of Thinking Tackles on. So from August until I went in December, I hadn't been on my own fishing for that whole period.
Mm.
I'd always had an agenda. So I went in December for a couple of nights on my own, and it was just such a relief to be able to go just on my own.
Yeah.
And so I've vowed next year I'm not going to do anything like as much work fishing, whether that be, you know, taking a team from Calder away as a social thing, or, you know, or filming, or, you know, what, something to do that supports Gigantico. I'm going to get back to my own fishing, because I did a great spring last year doing my own fishing. And then the summer and autumn, you know what it's like when you flit around from lake to lake to lake, you don't get to learn anywhere properly.
Mm.
And you're scratching the surface, you're making too many mistakes because you haven't built up that experience on that venue. And I had a pretty poor sort of late summer and autumn fish-wise, and it really got to me that I hadn't concentrated on one place and really got some good results like I had in the spring. So this year coming, I'm calming down the filming, calming down the thinking tackle. I'm only doing a few episodes of that. Darryl's going to do a few. Simon Scott's going to do a few as well. And then I'm going to concentrate. I've got a couple of places to concentrate on next year for my own fishing that I'm really looking forward to. So, yeah, a bit more me time.
Yeah, it makes a difference. I didn't have a syndicate for a few years. I sort of got burnt out with the chasing them, having to fish every week. So there's a pressure when you join a syndicate because you kind of feel like you're missing something when you're not there, and you get out of sea.
Absolutely. A week away is like a month away, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, the fish have changed their patterns. They're doing something different, and it's like starting again if you're only going sporadically. But then when I didn't have a lake for a couple of years, I felt like I didn't feel like I was fishing. I'd go to the odd day ticket lake and a different lake over here, and I just never got into the routine properly, you know.
So
there must be a balance there somewhere, or to find a nice syndicate a bit nearer home where there's not so much pressure, or I don't know. Well,
yeah,
we're lucky up here. We've got one called Clearwater. It's fairly new, but it's got some old originals in it, and it's 40 minutes away, so for me that's less than 3 hours.
It gets harder, mate, doesn't it? It gets harder the longer you fish. Trying to find places that turn you on, it gets harder and harder and harder because I don't know if you find, the older you get, the less tolerant you become. I'm not prepared to sit next to people 10 yards away that are casting in your swim and ruining it for you right on bait time. I'd rather sit there and catch smaller fish and be almost on my own than be packed in with everybody else. You know, I've done that to death, probably at the right time when I was younger and keener.
Yeah.
And I just want an easy life now. I don't want to battle against everybody else to catch a particular 40 or 50 pounder or whatever. That does nothing for me now. A bit of tranquility, peace and quiet, me against the fish.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm lucky with Embryo. Like this spring, I've fished a lake that we've taken on and now fenced, that's going to open as a syndicate at the beginning of next year. And I got to fish it when we didn't really know what was in there. I was the only one over there because we were waiting for permission for a dozen guys to sort of fish it and police it at the same time. And through all the ramblings with estate agents or land agents, this permission didn't come through. So rather than me being fishing alongside these 12 guys, I fished it alone for 6 or 7 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, sitting on 45 acres where you don't know what's swimming around in there on your own is a gift.
Yeah.
It really, really is. You know, it does spoil you. And although the lake's not full of 30s and 40s, you know, and I caught a few decent ones, and we did a bit of filming down there, which you'll see in Masterclass next year. You know, them sort of things are the things that really get me going, you know. And every fish you catch, you think, a fence is going around here in a few months' time. This fish is not going to get eaten.
Yeah.
The syndicate's going to start. The bait's going to go in. The fish are going to catapult on in weight. And this is going to be another Wellington Country Park in 5 years' time, but there's going to be a progressive stocking policy. There's the right rules about what bait to put in and not put in at certain times of the year. And it's going to be full of 40s and 50s. It is, you know. And so to be around them sort of places at the very start is a real privilege, you know, a real gift. So I'm fortunate in that I've got some other places coming up this year that perhaps not quite a special lake, but, you know, I'm going to have a chance to sort of fish them and see really what swims in there, which is quite unique.
Fantastic, yeah. I've had a few opportunities to fish lakes over the years that nobody else has, and it is just your own little private piece of serenity. It's amazing, and it doesn't really matter what fish are in there at the time. It's the not knowing is enough to keep you excited and motivated, and yeah, it's fantastic. Any holidays this year? We bumped into each other once again in a sunnier climes, didn't we?
we did, yeah. I'm going Thailand with the family over the course of the winter, just to sort of get away from this strange weather that we're having.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll be nice. And then I'm off to Morocco, which is a working holiday. Me and Daryl are going to make a thinking tackle or two thinking tackle shows over in Morocco before the winter's over.
Yeah.
And then summertime, I guess we will go to Ibiza again. I don't quite know when, but I guess that we will. You know, it's our sort of summer pilgrimage is always there. There's nowhere else in Europe quite like it. So. Even though we don't really go out anymore, you know, once or twice in a couple of weeks, you know, it's still everything else about it's so great that, you know.
Well, you say there's nowhere else quite like it. I might have somewhere for you. It's probably you're very aware of, but I'm moving to Slovenia for 6 months at the end of April, which is right. Yes, right on the border of Croatia. We're living about 20 minutes from Lake Bled. We've spent probably 12 weeks in Croatia and Slovenia over the last two summers. And decided to live there, running some fishing trips. But the festival scene in Croatia is amazing. It's like Ibiza 20-25 years ago. It's a quarter of the price of Ibiza, about half the price of England, and just as beautiful. The scenery, same vibes. Everything about it's good. So yeah, I'll send you some information of some of the things to have a look at.
I do, definitely. I'm always looking for new places. I've heard, you know, there's a lot of Eastern European DJs that I really like.
Yeah.
And you know, Romanians, you know, Czechs, you know, they love their electronic music out there. And a couple of the boys at work have been. Elliot went to one of the festivals. I think it was in Croatia, actually.
Yeah.
And said it was absolutely brilliant.
It would have been about that. Yeah, well, Spenny, as you know, Spenny, our partner in the fishing show, he runs Kaluki. He's got a stage at Hideout this year, which is in June. You can get over it and get some fishing done as well. The fishing out there is fantastic, as you probably know.
I don't know much about it. Obviously, I know that Lake Sumba that the guys went to, that everybody now seems to be clamouring for. We went to a lake in Croatia that I wouldn't go to again if you paid me because of the attitude of the people that were there when we were there. I mean, we had people like the KGB in an old black Mercedes watching us through binoculars. It was like that. And timing how long we had a fish in the net for, you couldn't have a fish in the net for longer than 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So if you got a double take and you landed one and the other one was on for 10 minutes, they'd come round and tell you to empty the other fish out of the net while you were still playing a fish on the other rod. You know, it's just absolutely, and they just didn't want us there. Absolutely insane. But I think that's the minority rather than the norm, you know?
Yeah, I've got a fixer over there, a guy that I've got very good friends with, Gasper, who's Slovenian, but he's very well respected all over Europe. He knows everybody off all the lakes. And he brought a few of the Croatian team down to see me when we fished one of the lakes over there. And they were all, I found the opposite. They were really receptive. You know, they come down two or three nights in a row chatting. I mean, maybe because of the company type thing that, I don't know, maybe there was...
Yeah, we were in the best swim. That's what it was.
Right.
We had guys fishing the best swim on the lake up until the point we were coming there. We then dropped in behind them and nobody liked it. The blokes who looked after us, Harry and Dalibor, just the nicest men on earth, you know, and all the guys that came down to see us, you know, couldn't have been nicer. It was just the officials of the lake itself were dead against us being there, and they made no secret of it, you know.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, we paid the money just like anybody else, and you know, we were fishing to the rules just like anybody else. But these silly things about putting fish back in there, it was just crazy. But yeah, mate, I'm all ears about the fishing as well. It's you know, I would say that there seems to be the commercial place fish look quite beaten up.
They were
on the lake we fished in Croatia when Ali and Neil were doing the long range masterclass. You know, I would like to go somewhere where it's not perhaps as smashed to pieces, and you know, because they're so the average angler there is so behind us when it comes to fish safety and fish care. You know, you've got loads of broken fins and the mouths are battered, and you know, I'm not into that at all. I don't care how big they are, if they look like they've been through the mincer, that don't do it for me at all.
Yeah, it sounds like you had a bad experience. But I do agree, the Croatian lakes, there's a lot more of a match fishing culture over there, you know, carp match fishing. Yes. That's why they're very good at the casting, the long range, and a lot of the, where Shumba is, there's about a dozen other lakes around Zagreb within a sort of 12-kilometre radius. There's 12 gravel pits, all with big fish in. They're all just behind Shumba as far as sizes. But you're right, they're all quite big. They've all got thousands of fish in, and they fish it very much in a match fishing style. Most of the lakes we're booking trips on, we've got one in Croatia, and the rest of the lakes are in Slovenia, and they're all natural lakes. They're all, you know, dammed sort of valleys, and they're stunning. You know, we've got one called Little Cassin, which it's just arms off everywhere. It's different fishing. You feel like you're fishing properly. I mean, they do still have a few matches on these other lakes, but not to the extent of the Croatians. There, every weekend, those lakes from sort of Friday to Monday have got a match on through the autumn, and same early in the year. It's only the summer that they don't. And as you say, some of the fish do look a bit tired because they're all just big rocks and stuff on the gravel pits, and they've all got. I mean, in the rules, I was quite surprised with how up to our equipment they are, you know, that I mean, they enforce you to have cradles and stuff because of the rocks, but I think it's the anglers themselves, because they're catching so many fish, you know, 10 fish a day on some of these lakes, they're just not looking after them like we would, you know, when you're catching one fish every however long. But I think you've had from what you're saying, the first person I ever spoke to that's got that kind of little bit of a downer on the Croatian fishing, so I think you must have had a worse experience than the average.
We did, mate, I'm sure. I mean, the guys that went to Sumba or whatever it's called, I mean, yeah, again, they said that the guy, they couldn't be welcoming enough, and obviously they made a great monster carp show over there, and I'm sure we did, and them sort of conditions that you're talking about, where you can fish properly and you're not having people carving you up and all that sort of thing, rowing across all your rods and, you know, all that, you know, if that's all under control, then that sounds good.
Yeah, well, most of Croatia, you're not even allowed to use a boat. They do. Shumba's a bit weird. It's super commercial now. I mean, it's €50 a day, which is unheard of for over there. Most of the lakes are 20. It's only because it's basically 2 years ahead of all the other lakes. It got the fish a couple of years earlier, and that's the only difference. There was one lake that we fished last year. It had 3 20-kilo fish in 3 years ago. It's done 12. Let me get this right now. I think there's 12 30-kilo fish in there and 120 25-kilo fish. That's how fast
they're ridiculous.
Yeah, that's how fast they're growing over there. It's crazy. But Shumba just got the fish a year or two earlier. But they're all owned by private clubs. There's no private lakes over there. They're all owned by a club in each district, in each region. And for some reason, Shumba has allowed, they've done some sort of deal where they allowed you to book it privately, which no other lake is over there. They're all public access, but on the weeks that they book it privately, you can use boats and bait boats and all that other stuff, but you can't on the rest of Croatia. You're just not allowed. And in Slovenia, you're allowed to use a boat for finding spots and baiting up, but not for rigs, or, you know, you've still got cast.
Mad, isn't it? You've got the rules like that. Yeah, if you go to a festival, you can get away with absolute murder. And you know, it's like I'd be for 20 years ago, but you can't use a boat on the lake. It's mad.
Yeah, the rules, as I say, are pretty hard and fast. You've got to use cradles. You know, that there's all line diameters, hook sizes. It's just like an English syndicate, to be honest. Most of the rules, and that. they're policed every day, you know, it's like public bailiffs. But anyway, we won't bore our listeners with any more of that. I can talk to you privately, but it's a good place to go. I assure you won't be disappointed. But, thank you. I wish you all the best for 2018.
Same to you, mate, and obviously all the listeners. Happy New Year to everybody, and I hope the one you're looking for goes into your landing net next year.
Fantastic. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us, Danny.
All right, mate. Brilliant. See you later.
Bye-bye.
Cheers, mate. Ta-da.
So a big thank you to all of our guests today. Everybody gave up some time for us over this Christmas period, and we always thank our loyal contributors to the Carpcast. But I tell you what I saw on the internet today, Mark, and that was Alex up at Clearwater has had a shed load more fish dropped in the lakes. They are Devon Valley fish, which I didn't really know much about them as a fish supplier, but apparently they buy the priory fish small, which are obviously extremely good quality English fish. They buy them small and then grow them on themselves. And he's put on, I think he's put about 150 into the day ticket lake total and another 45 into the main syndicate lake. It's ridiculous. I know he was up to 180 grand in fish, and he's just had another close to 200. You know how much 20, 25 pound carps, a lot of 24s, you know, them fish are over 500 quid each. From a good UK supplier. I mean, it's crazy. That syndicate is without doubt going to be one of the best in the country. The work that he's done with it. You'd probably have to get your name on the list for a couple of years' time now. I think it's going to be a ticket in demand, but you can do that, clearwaterfisheries.co.uk. But I'm going to be doing a bit of time on the day ticket lakes, I think, this year, because the day ticket lakes, there's a load of fish gone in them. It's nice to fish a water with a couple of hundred fish. I quite like the ticket lakes. It's very long and thin, so you only fish one side of it. It's maybe 80, 90 yards to the far side. The longest bits, there are narrower bits. But you've got your own water and nobody can mess with you. You know, you've got the sort of width from you to halfway along the next peg. I think there's markers on the far bank as well that they've done. It's got some cracking fish in there. I know they stocked them up to 34 into the day ticket lake this week, which it's just ridiculous. Plus, there's already 30s in there, I think. And I'm very excited about that. And considering it's in the northwest and 40 minutes from my house, it's almost a shame that I'm moving to Slovenia in the spring. But it'll certainly be a good place for me to fish early in the year, and I still reckon we can get a social on there at some point, maybe next year when I get back from Slovenia, but I'm sure we can get up there for a bit.
Time's running out this year.
The social we're doing on the Sitch, that's sold out really quickly. I think we sold a dozen spaces for that, some for the week, some for 4 days, but that sold out so quickly. I wonder if we should do one on the day ticket lake, just maybe 10 people. I wonder if we can do one at the start of April, just over a weekend, or I think we may. Yeah. I'll have a chat with Alex about that.
I think so, because I've still got the picture of that fish you sent me just before we started recording on my screen, and
yeah,
they're all like that. Wow,
they are all like that. They're very much all like that. He spent fortunes, and most of them are handpicked. He's got the creams of the crop. He's had first pick on all the fish, and what a ridiculous place. I mean, even if you just go up there for dinner in the cafe, Beanie, who's the chef in there, is a fantastic chef. He's not a cook; he's a chef trained, and the food is amazing. You know, it's a bit. Proper bistro up there. It's a nice place just to go for a walk round and a day out, and the way he's developing it, there's a lodge you can rent up there as well now. It's got a better kitchen and furnishing than my house by some degree, so yeah, it's absolutely fantastic. And talking of the Sitch, I saw Monument today, another one of Rob Hales's waters. The Monument had some cancellations for some prime days. The actual swim that had become available, I think it was 4 and 5, is a prime swim at this time of year. I think it did a couple of big 30s last week or the week before. But if you want more info on any of the RH Fisheries water, it's rhfisheries.com. You've obviously got the Monument 1 and 2, which are fantastic day ticket fishes. They work in running sessions, 36-hour sessions, which means the fish get a rest every other night. Always fancied fishing that. So I look at those sort of places in the winter, you know, when you want to go fish somewhere with maggots and try and get a bite. I've just gone on the website now, actually. There's a picture of Carl and Alex from when they were up there. But yeah, they're extremely well-run day ticket lakes. The Sitch is obviously a syndicate. It's a fantastic syndicate. Very young fish in there that are growing rapidly. Fish up to 45 currently. Very well stocked. The lake's set in the middle of a forest. It's beautiful. It is very, very old lake. Stunning surroundings, as you will see, Mark, on our social. It's a really nice place to be. In fact, one of the DJs, Matt Wood, that follows us, he posted up the other day after seeing the Nash video. Are we setting decks up at the social? But I think I'm going to be moving to Slovenia literally the day after that social, so it's going to be a lot of hassle, extra hassle to set some music up. But it's a perfect place to do it because it literally is in the middle of nowhere. There is a holiday swim on there which you can book, rhfisheries.com, and I think you can book that any time of year other than the open access weeks in the winter. And there are spaces on the open access during the spring where it always used to be closed, but it's a chance for non-syndicate members to check out the lake to fish it. Acton Burnell is a syndicate, top and bottom lake. The bottom lake did a kipper, one of the originals, I think, a few weeks back. I think it was 45 or something I saw posted up. That used to have 250s in that lake. They are believed missing, presumed dead. Possibly one of them's alive, but some really old fish in there. Much character fish in there. And the top lake, which is on the same syndicate, it's fished a £49 in there, about 23.40s, I think. And there is open access in the spring as well, so you get a chance to fish those lakes on private weeks. Western Park is another one. Oh, what's going on with my coffee? I hope I'm not getting the lurgy, not just before New Year.
You can keep it that end of the wires.
I'm breathing down the microphone. Hopefully you'll get it. We can both be ill. But yeah, Western Park's full of old scalies. They're absolutely fantastic to fish in there. You'll see Bev Clifford, the Carp Talk guys, Crowey, they fish it fairly regular, and then you see some of the fish that they catch. Beautiful fish, up to £40 in there, and there's even a boathouse with bedroom kitchen that you can rent as a holiday let. So check it out, 01952. 463141, rhfisheries.com, if you're interested in any of those waters. Not really spoke about the VIP holidays for a little while, but I think we've mentioned them enough. Just to say, check out vipcarpholidays.com if you're interested in Lake Bled, in any of the fantastic lakes in Slovenia or Croatia next year, because I'm going to be there from April myself, and Gashper, who did it. Did an interview for us on the Carpcast a couple of months back. Also has the fantastic River Lot where Briggsy is right now, actually. I've seen he had a fish on Christmas Day. Decent looking common. There's a villa and a swimming pool. It's a perfect sort of family holiday place. And then we also have another family holiday place in France near Limoges. Fantastic old farmhouse, sleeps up to 10 people, private lake with fish up to £50, stuff full of fish, 10 fish a day you'll catch there. Oh dear. VIPcarpholidays.com for all the information on all of that stuff. So that's pretty much it for us, Mark. Let's say thank you to all the guests once again. Thank you to you, Mark, for putting up with us for another year. We are almost 3 years here, aren't we?
Yeah, no, it is. I remember that in the snow driving from Doncaster over to Blackpool where we recorded episode one, not having a clue what we were doing.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. And
now we use Skype and haven't got a clue what we're doing.
Well, we checked the stats the other day. We are just over 900,000 downloads across iTunes and SoundCloud, which is quite a lot. And I think when we hit a million, that will be something to be proud of, I think.
It'll be something to celebrate, I think.
It is, yeah, and I think we'll do some special stuff for that. We'll get all the stuff that we've got to give away, you know, one of these boxes of hoodies, no doubt. I might even, you know, I maybe even give away a holiday, in Croatia or Slovenia. I mean, that's how big a deal it is. A million downloads when we hit it. The company Libsyn that track, which hosts the podcast, they host all the big podcasts, most large. You know, people like Joe Rogan and stuff, that they all use Libsyn, which is who we use. And they're very stringent on the numbers. They have to adhere to a there's like a body for podcasting. I think it's called the IAB, and they've recently changed the rules for advertising because podcasts are so big now, and obviously the advertising is based on X amount of downloads. It's all based on the volume of downloads. You get so much per thousand, I think. A bit like YouTube does it. But the figures have to be tracked accurately, and some companies don't, you know. And I listen to a podcast called The Feed, which is Libsyn's own podcast, which, you know, tells you all the info. Stuff changes all the time in the podcasting world, the technology, the equipment, the way they're tracking numbers, and they've just fell into line with the new regulations for podcasting. And most people are complaining because their numbers have dropped 70%. It now won't count listens by the same users, so it's completely unique listens. It tracks it by ISP address, and I think you have to listen to a certain percentage of the podcast. So let's say like us or like Joe Rogan, if you're a 2.5 to 3 hour podcast and somebody listens to the first hour, it won't count as a listen, even though they've maybe listened to an hour. Now a lot of people are shortening the podcast, maybe to like 20 minutes and stuff, which is how you get the numbers up. You can like artificially inflate the numbers. Obviously, we don't do that. Our podcasts are, they're always somewhere between an hour and a half and 3 hours as a rule, which kind of hurts us in the figures, but we're still hitting 30,000 a month, even though we've, you know, ours have dropped from the 50,000 a month we were getting, but they're still hitting 30,000 a month when most people are saying their figures have dropped 70%. So we'd like to thank our listeners, you know, the people that do listen, well, they clearly listen for, you know, 3/4 of the podcast at least. Otherwise, the figures wouldn't be counted. So, yeah, thank you to you guys for sticking with us. It makes us want to do it. The fact that we still get regular feedback, you know, the fact that the figures are very healthy, and, you know, 90% of the feedback we get is either very positive or constructive. So we will carry on. We will carry on putting it out there for you guys as long as that remains the same. You know, there are options to support us. If you want to support us in any way, you can donate at carpcast.com. You can basically join the extra membership. I think it's like $11.99 for 3 months, something like that, which just supports us a little bit, helps pay for some of the equipment. It isn't, there is a cost to doing this. It is in the hundreds of pounds a month to maintain the podcast. So entirely optional. The podcast is free, but there is a few extra bits that you get if you do join. There's about 20, 30 hours of stuff that's unreleased. And it just helps us keep it going, really. So, but as I say, it is optional, entirely up to you. But yeah, we're going to carry on. We will celebrate the million downloads when we finally hit it. If we're averaging 30,000 a month, it looks like sort of March, April, we'll probably hit a million.
Do you think that'll coincide with the episode 100, which is another celebration?
Well, what are we on now? 89, is this?
This is 89. So do you think we can, the stars will align, we will cross the streams?
I'll tell you what, 89 gives us 11 more shows to 100, which is roughly 3 months content. It's going to be tight. I think we'll be very slightly short of the million.
Do we put out a couple of extra cast selects on the Friday, which don't count towards the numbers, but we'll up the stats slightly.
Yeah, I'll tell you what we could. I'll tell you what.
The figures.
No, that is actually a fairly sensible idea. We can put out a couple more of our favourite interviews. So you might get two podcasts some weeks. And I think what we should do, maybe we'll put one of the very early extras out as an episode so that people can hear kind of what we did on the extras. Might encourage you to join in. But yeah, one of the good story ones that we did right at the start, maybe we can put one of those out for the general public. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I don't see why not.
Yeah, just give you a little teaser of what, because there's probably a dozen of those, isn't there, of like the 2-3 hour ones.
Yeah, there is a dozen. There's, you know, seasons 1 and 2 we did.
Yeah, there was 5 or 6 in each, wasn't there? So, and they're 2 to 3 hours long. So maybe we'll put one of those out and give you a little taster of the rest of them, especially some of those early ones with Ronnie DeGroote. Remember Ronnie?
Yes. Yeah, there's some. Well, I think there's some great stories amongst all of them.
Yeah, especially Frank Warwick's in the first series. Yeah, he had some crackers and some good technical stuff as well.
Yeah.
In Frank's, yeah. So. Fantastic. This will be the last show from us in 2017. We'll be seeing you in 2018, all bright, bushy tailed, and looking forward to a bit of fishing up at Clearwater early in the year. I shall be fishing. I've got a trip up to Nash's in January. Yeah, got something very interesting. Roger and I have bought a table from a designer. Now I forget this guy's name. But this designer does like custom made pieces. He's known for his glass tables, and they're like bronze underneath. And Nashi had a fishy one made. He's got like a hippo, which is pretty famous. The hippo one, I think there was 50 of them made. They're all numbered. This guy's, he makes stuff for the rich and famous, like, you know, Elton John's got his pieces, like super, super rich people. He lives in Scotland. This guy's he's quite famous as a designer, and he designs these bronze things. And what happens is he makes like a run of whatever it is, and then they smash the cast at the end of it so there can never be any more. And Kevin's had some done of two carp with the glass table on top, and they're not cheap. Like, I don't even want to tell you how much it is, but Roger's bought one. Well, just three of these been made. Kevin's had one of his friends has had one, and he was trying to sell the other one, so Roger's bought it as an investment and sold half to me. So we're not going to use it. We're probably just going to keep it and then sell it one day. But I went and saw Kevin's last week, and oh my god, it's fantastic. Really nice. But yeah, it's most of the pieces this guy's done, they treble in value the day you buy it, because that's it, there aren't any more. And these hippo ones go for fortunes, and there was 50 of them. So these carp ones, there's only 3 in the world, and this guy's pretty famous. So yeah, I'm just waiting for him to die, and then sorry, I'm not wishing anybody an early death, but I just hope he's a drinker or something. Oh, that's a bit mean, wasn't it? Sorry, I really, I've not named him anyway, but yeah, I really hope you don't die. But yeah, it's a pretty sick investment, I think.
Oh, you're going to have to send me a picture of that. Also, you didn't send me a picture of little Louis dressed in his reindeer outfit on Christmas Day while you were picking his poo up.
Yeah. Yeah, I forgot I'd spoke to you then. Yeah, I took a little Jack Russell. The missus had bought him a reindeer outfit with bells on and all sorts, and then dressed him up in it and then sent me out to walk him. Just as I was on the phone to you, he'd done a big crap on the side of the road. So the cars are going past beeping at me. I'm on the phone to you laughing, and I'm trying to pick big steaming turtle from this Jack Russell in a reindeer outfit. Yeah. I did take some pictures of this table, I think, actually. I'll just send you one in a minute. In fact, I might post one on there. Remind me, I'll put one on the podcast page as well. If you are a collector or have very deep pockets and would like something like this, then we weren't looking to sell it just yet. We're looking to keep it a little while, but we have bought it as an investment. It's not going to be used. It's not even going to be assembled. But yeah, if you are very wealthy and like collecting those sorts of pieces, then... He actually had it done on two of the carp at the church. Like, I think one's the Beauty Queen. You know, that one's an absolute cracker.
Oh, yeah.
The other one's a 4x4. So, you know, they're cracking-looking carp in bronze. Bronze sculptured with a glass table. The way he does them, like, they're like half the... three-quarters of the fish is underneath the table, which is basically like the stand, and this glass bit sticks on top, and then it sticks out of the glass, if you know what I mean, like above the table. I'm describing it very well, but yeah, it's fairly impressive. I'm pretty sure I took pictures of it though, but I can't find them. But yeah, if I find them, I will send them or post them. Anyway, we'll see you in next year.
Yeah, see you on the other side. Happy New Year, everybody.
Seeing you. Simply love it.
The website at www.thecarpcast.com. There you'll find extra content, merchandise, and lots more to support the show, including our entire back catalogue of free offerings.